This show is brought to you by Club W. Don't ever come home to a wine-free house again. Just go to clubw.com/Joey to get 50% off your first order. That's right. Club W right now is offering our listeners 50% off of your first order when you go to clubw.com/Joey. Show is also brought to you by Ring.com. Go to Ring.com and look at their brand new video doorbell. The doorbell takes minutes to install and works with either your current wiring or built-in rechargeable battery. Go to ring.com/church right now to get free expedited FedEx shipping. That's ring.com/church to get free expedited FedEx shipping. And go to onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off all of the great optimization products like Alpha Brain and New Mood.
We're back, bitches. Monday, February 21st, whatever the fuck it is. I think today's Julius Erving's birthday. That's all I'm happy about.
God bless.
Lee Syatt's in the motherfucking house.
Fuck yeah.
And the most anticipated guest I've had in a long time, my uncle, Mr. Mike Dowd, from the documentary, The 7-5. What's happening, brother? Thank you for being on.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Joey. You did the right thing. You put me right in the kitchen here. You brought me right to your church. I can't believe it.
I don't fuck around.
Though. Amazing.
I saw you.
Top shelf.
I see you on this documentary. 20 people tell me to hit me up. That's always a bad sign when you Gentiles telling you, watch this.
Right.
And then you were on Nick's. And then when Nick was on Rogan, Nick spoke about you. And I've known Nick for a long time.
Right.
And Nick's a Boston kid, right. You know. So a lot of people that grew up with this type of behavior aren't really impressed with this. Like, they've just heard bits and pieces.
Right.
When I watched it and I saw a couple stories, but most importantly, I was watching you, I knew I was home. I had arrived.
Oh, my God.
I had finally seen somebody who's real. Finally, in all this bullshit world, finally, he's somebody real. I did this Christmas movie 7-8 years ago, and there's a guy in this movie that's an Italian guy, but he looks white. And out of all the years I've been in movies, this guy,
the Italian guys, they're not white, right?
Well, okay. No, but this guy looks like his name is Jerry. His name's not Enzo. And right. I see this guy, he only did one movie where he played not a mobster guy, but a guy from the neighborhood.
Okay.
And the second day that we did the movie, he had two supposedly mafia high-ranking captains on the set. Now, I saw these two old guys, they had to be in their 70s, and I didn't even say anything. I just turned my back. At that point, I didn't know who they were.
Right.
But if anything you know about us, we don't need to know who it is. It's got nothing to do with me. Yeah. I wave.
Gotta go.
The actor waved back at me. We were doing scenes that day, and I kept going. Then that night, the guy told me they were in town because they were trying to sell their lives. You know, they were trying to sell their life with the Colombo crime family, Donnie Shacks and the other guy, and they were talking, and then, you know, we met, we had what's his name on the show who was supposed to come on Friday, never showed again.
Oh, right.
Salubots, you know, and after that, I mean, I've been to.
Is he free?
He's free. When the Sopranos went off the air, I read for, you know, 3 or 4 things that were the guys were in the room, you know, guys that now had new stories. There's a Joey Carotti. Tommy Karate movie that they were going to make for a while.
I was with Tommy Karate.
Yeah, there was.
What a nice guy, to be honest.
Yeah.
Crazy.
What, the other guy from the Colombo, not the guy from the Colombo, the guy from the Bananos who was the last boss. They were going to make a movie about him recently. He finally sold his story.
Why do you think that it's all so popular? All this mobs?
Well, the genre was very popular. Now, after the Sopranos really put a stab into that genre. The Sopranos took the air out of it. That's it. Nobody could do them. Now you got really nowhere to go.
Right.
You got really nowhere to go. When Goodfellas came out, I remember talking to a fucking priest about Goodfellas. I remember being in church on a Sunday.
Oh, my God.
And me and him walking to the side.
I can't imagine.
Coming out of Sacred Heart Church in Boulder, Colorado. I'll never forget that. I forget his name. God forgive me. And I remember walking out, and he's like, what's going on, Lee? And I go, Father, I saw Goodfellas the other day. And he goes, no shit. I saw it too, the matinee. I go, I didn't see it. He goes, I was sitting in front. I didn't have my shit on.
He didn't have his
He was gear. Telling me, Jesus Christ, gear. You know, here's me and this priest talking about Goodfellas. Yeah. And he went with like a nun and another dude from the church. So it was something that was more mainstream.
Yeah, it crosses over.
Nobody really went to see the fucking movie with the Boston guy.
Oh, yeah, Black Mass was terrible.
$30 million, oh, yeah, 20 yeah, million. And I enjoyed it. I got kicks out of it just because I hadn't seen anything in that genre. You know what I'm saying?
Really? You like that?
Yeah, the Winter Hill Gang or something.
The Winter Hill
Gang. I was looking so much. I love these kind of movies. So I was really looking forward to Whitey Bulger.
Whitey Bulger.
Yeah, give him some respect. Whitey Bulger's story. Yeah.
So it's crazy when they really don't hit. Like, Black Mass for me, I had, like, it was Johnny Depp. I thought it was going to be great. And it just didn't.
Movies are not. The Sopranos deflated that genre.
Funny story. Guy sends me on Twitter. He goes, I watched The Black Mask, and thank God, he says, the 7-5, the same weekend. He said, it saved my fucking weekend. I'm like, what is The Black Mask? I didn't know what it was yet. I had to look up what The Black Mask was and then say he watched The Black Mask, which was about the Winter Hill Gang and Whitey Bulger or whatever. And then he said, the 7-5 saved his fucking weekend. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That this is like the documentary is better than the movie about the Winter Hill Gang. So I was very impressed. I mean, come on.
So your movie came out on IMDb. It says 2014, but in reality,
the official theatrical release was May 2015,
and it came out in movie theaters.
It came out in select movie theaters. IFC did a shit job with it. I'm going to be honest. They did a lousy distribution. They had no idea what they had, and it went from there. It went to. HBO, Showtime, I don't know, Netflix.
Showtime, Netflix.
Amazon,
Amazon, all these different places. And really, to be honest with you, my son made this thing famous. You know, he took me up on social media and he managed me and he just kept pumping it out and pumping it out. He had me on like Reddit. He had me on all these different shows. And like, you know, really, I don't make any money from the documentary. But, you know, I'm trying to build a brand, my own brand, you know, the 7-5 Mike Dowd story. And but he really pumped it out. I mean, this thing was dead in the water. It's one of the best. Listen, I don't watch TV. I'm going to be honest. I hate to say that, but I don't watch TV.
Never. You're one of those guys.
I watch news.
You watch news and sports on Sunday.
That's it. I don't watch anything else. I mean, Shark Tank, all right? I do watch.
Now you watch
Shark Tank. I watch now. Right.
But 20 years ago when you were a cop, you didn't even know what a TV was.
I didn't know what it was. No, I don't give a shit. I was out drinking from the end of my shift. I drank from midnight to 4 in the morning, did a couple blasts, got in the car and drove home. That was my life.
No TV.
Got up in the morning, put on the fucking news, and then if there was a sports thing, Mets, I'm a Met fan. Sorry, fuck yous all. I don't care. And Rangers at the time. I was a crazy Ranger fan, which I'm not into hockey anymore. So
you could go out every night. That's like so foreign to me. Just go like getting drunk. Like that's.
Well, I started at work. Never mind. Get out.
How old were you when you started going out 5 nights a week? Tell Lee, how old are you?
22, 21.
5 nights a week. Over. Happy hours. This, every that. Day.
Start
your friends.
Yeah, all day.
How old were you when you became a police officer?
21.
Okay, so when you started going out.
Well, probably prior to that. Probably 18, 19. It was a 4 or 5
when
night
your
a week.
When your first shift was a 4 to 12?
No, my first shift was a day shift. Yeah.
7 to 3, 8 to 4. 7 to 3:30.
Yeah,
that's fucking crazy. Just to be a cop from 7 to 3:30.
Yeah.
Like at 6, I'm going to go do laundry.
It ends?
Yeah, and go
it
play
ends?
Fucking basketball.
Well, I didn't start out doing that, you know.
No,
I started out doing the right thing, you know.
Right, no,
and I understand. Let me tell you something. It was a good fucking job. I mean, the pay was shitty, but it was a good job. You know, you went to work. The minute you got there, you started getting paid, right? Think about a lot of people today. They got to go to a job site. They got to, you know, wait for the crew to gather. And they got to start doing something. They got to earn their money. You know, back then, you know, you showed up. The paycheck started the minute you stepped into the precinct. You know, like, and what'd you do? You got in the car.
Now, the guy that you were partners with, what's his name?
What? The one in the movie?
Yeah.
Urell. Kenny Urell.
Kenny made a statement. He said that he grew up and there was a test to be a cop.
Oh, that was Chicky, I think.
No, that was Kenny.
That was Kenny,
Kenny said, I took the test and the fireman test.
Or the police.
The police same and shit. The same shit and the cops call.
Yeah.
When you were 7, did you tell your dad, I'm going to be a fucking cop?
I was
going to
be an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor. He told me what I was going to be.
I just wanted to know. So when you became 18, a test became available for you to become a cop.
Yeah. Took the test. And
what year was this?
This was, I took the test probably in 1980.
What was the test like? Like, what's on a police officer's entrance test?
It's just basic intelligence level stuff. They're just trying to see if you can answer questions, yes and no, and, you know, simple stuff like that, you know?
Did you have to go through, like, a psych test or no?
Oh, that's, you know, that's once they start investigating you. And, yeah, so but it's a process. But the test was not, I'd say it was an 8th grade level, 10th grade level test as far as, you know, mathematics and bullshit, you know, sociology.
How many yards before you stop?
Yeah, but listen, the test wasn't about the test. It was, can you show up? Right. Can you answer questions? Right. You know, after that, then it becomes the process of becoming a cop, which is much more entailed and detailed, so, you know, psychological, medical, physical.
It's so funny when I think of you and what intrigues me the most about you, that I've... In my lifetime, I'm 53 years old as of Friday.
Right.
But in my lifetime...
God bless you. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I've heard of two people who were doing the things you were doing on the screen, you know, in the police as cops.
Right.
And then I lived with one. One of them was one of my best friends growing up. In fact, we just spoke, maybe last Wednesday.
Okay.
We still speak. We're very tight.
Right.
So I see the correlations between you three.
Right.
The correlations are you all got hired between 79 and 80.
Right. Investigated. I eventually hired in 82, but yeah, it's the same time. Yeah.
The kid that I'm talking about, that I was tight with, he didn't have a record before he became a cop. But you knew this guy was not going to fucking be a cop when we were 16. He was one of those dudes that was 3 years ahead of the fucking... Of the fucking thing, like, you know, you were getting weed for 200 a car for 4 ounces in those days.
Right.
You could buy, what the fuck was it? Yeah, $200 bought you 4 ounces, which was $50 an ounce. You could sell the ounces for 100.
Right.
He had a better deal. Right. The weed was better. And he went to the Bronx and came back, and he was 16. Right. He had a car.
He was a survivor already.
It was fucking amazing.
He was a business guy.
So when they came to me and said, Baba the Baba is going to become a cop, I go,
no way.
Are you fucking kidding me? And it just wasn't Bop of the Bop. It was him and another guy and another guy and another guy I knew. These guys are all right guys. They've never taken nobody in the weeds and shot them.
Right, right.
But they're kinky motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Well, how did this happen?
I'm blown away that at 21, 4 years out of high school or 3 years out of high school, you can be a cop.
Yeah, never have a job prior to it either.
No military experience.
Nothing.
No security guard at the mall.
Right.
No weapons, nothing.
Go into Queens. I mean,
fill out the paperwork, do a test.
Take a test.
They call you.
You got a job.
Okay, how long in the academy?
5 months and change.
5 months. Yeah. You fucking muck around, you shoot. Now, let me ask you.
It's like being in Catholic school.
Right.
You know, when you were a little kid in this Catholic, same thing.
Now, where did you grow up in life?
I grew up, I was born in Brooklyn.
How many fist fights you get into?
I had 7 brothers. I fought every day.
Did you sell a nickel bag?
I had seven brothers and sisters. We fought every day.
Did you ever sell a nickel bag? Did you ever
I had quite a few street fights as a kid. No.
Did you know?
I never stole a thing. I stole some chunkies when I was 6. Mm-hmm. And I got beat with a wiffle ball.
And that was it after that? You never stole it?
A few more times after, okay. But not a lot.
You knew who the bad people were in your neighborhood?
Yeah, everybody did.
And you knew who the good people were?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And this is
and we were the good people, you know.
You were the good people.
No, I understand. No, really. You know, my dad was a fireman, you know. He raised a bunch of kids, and he did his best. And, you know, they all pretty much did successful things. They all became firemen and cops, too. You know, but listen, I was supposed to be the doctor, the lawyer, or the accountant. I wasn't going to be a fireman or a cop or anything that's like that, civil service. I was going to be the one to take the family to the next level.
So were you smart?
So I did. So I did. Just a different level. I went down.
Why did they think, were you like really
I was
smart?
Reasonably intelligent.
Yeah.
I was a quick learner. I was a very adaptable. I learned how to adapt pretty quickly wherever I was at. So I guess, you know, there's a different intelligence called like an emotional quotient intelligence. I was able to adapt to people, read people quickly, and utilize them to, they use the word manipulation. You know, I was able to manipulate, but, you know, not like whining and crying. Manipulate like Steve Jobs would do. You know, one of those guys. You know, they're the smartest guy in the room, but they know how to work the smartest guy in the room.
Give me 2 minutes here. Give me 2 minutes real quick. Give me 2 minutes. Close your eyes. You're 94 years old. God forbid, the Lord closes your eyes. you go to heaven. God says to you, listen, I want you to, I'm going to forgive you for what you did down there, Mikey Dad, but I want you to thank me for the number one gift I gave you. What's the gift you're going to thank him for?
My children.
No.
No. He like, gave like you, he gave you personal trait?
He gave you a gift that not a lot of people see, and you know how to read people in 6.2 seconds flat.
Yeah. Okay.
When I watched you tell the story about the dude in the car with the tickets, you're looking around. This guy could be IA.
Well,
this guy could be
true.
Deep undercover. Well, this guy could be. And you know this. You know that even when you were a cop, you know, I'm watching this documentary. I watched it four times. This is what I'm getting from him.
Yeah, I made a living out of reading people's faces.
You know. You know.
I did.
And God gave me that saying.
Yeah, you're right.
When I was a kid, I knew how to learn how to, right. You know, I was the one that they said, take a look around the corner, and if there's a car, come back. Like, nothing happened.
Right.
Still going to the store. Still buy what you're going to buy.
Right.
Don't fucking hurry up. Come back and tell us the car, the plate. Let us know what's going on. And I had to do it, come back like nothing happened.
Right.
And you just developed this gift.
Yes, you do.
My gift is I never sold to an undercover. I never, nothing. When I got pinched, if somebody else got arrested and they came and got me, and that was it.
Right.
But I always had, I could look at a motherfucker and go, listen, let's get out of here. Let's take a walk.
It happened to me. It happened to me more than once. In fact, just before we get pinched, they tried to introduce me to undercover. Kenny and his flunky there, and I'm like, I told you we don't need anybody else, and I don't trust what's going on here. But meanwhile, they brought me into the room with the guy. It was done. This guy was undercover. I said, I don't like the way this looks. This is back in 1992, just about 3 months before, 3 weeks before, 4 weeks before we get arrested. And you see, if you watch the 7/5 documentary, he's in there. He's a really white Irish looking guy. A real white Irish looking
guy. Oh, was it the guy who said he was undercover?
Yes.
Right at the end.
That was him. I met him and I'm like, okay, well, I don't like this scene here. I'm out of here. I told you I don't want anybody new. I don't want to know anybody new. I'm fine. You know? Bingo. Doesn't matter. Once you met the guy, it was over. Because now they put the tail on you. And, you know, they got 147 men from the New York City Police Department Internal Affairs Division assigned to assist Suffolk County. About 85 member investigative team there. About 240, 230 men on me. I thought I was seeing stars.
Thought you ate some of my stars.
I thought I was seeing shit. I'm like, you can't make this up.
I don't know what, maybe this is the question. What do you guys call what you both have? I don't know if it's charming or, like, when did that start? Because you guys, it's just amazing. It's just amazing
charisma,
to listen to.
Yeah, I don't know
what it's called.
No, it's not charisma because I never got pussy.
Well,
so it's not charisma. Well, Elvis had charisma. Sinatra had charisma. He's a good looking dude, yeah, Mike Dodd.
Nah, I hold my own, but I hold my own too much.
when you were talking about in the 7/5, you're talking about getting money for the first time. Well, at the point in this, in 87, coke was $34,000 a kilo.
Right.
And you went into the bag, and you're like, Jesus fucking Christ, there was white powder everywhere.
Oh, that was a good one.
I saw
that was the Panamanians. That was the Panamanians'
oh,
money.
I saw your eyes. I saw the excitement in your heart.
Stop. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
No, it's not embarrassing.
Well, it's true.
It's fucking true.
Yeah, but it's...
I enjoyed it, too.
I was supposed to be a cop.
Listen, I was supposed to be an attorney, and I was supposed to be a Catholic, and my mother had just died. I was supposed to, you know, uplive her name. It's the same fucking difference.
Yeah.
And one day you find yourself kicking in a window, you know, taking
that something. That was a fucking amazing
taking
day.
Taking something that don't belong to you.
The smell was amazing. It smelled like the bazooka bubblegum smell, though.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry.
And your dick is getting
I'm
hard.
Sorry.
And you're sweating. And your palms are sweating. Look, you have no idea. You go deaf and your ears are ringing. You know, you get.
All I could figure was, how am I going to get this shit out of here? There's cops everywhere. How the fuck am I going to get this stuff out of here?
And I was a fucking nothing. I'd get 8 ounces, 6 ounces. You know, I'd get somebody's stash that they would lose their house a month later. Because fucking...
They couldn't pay their mortgage now.
Yeah, they couldn't pay their mortgage now.
Because they were fucking...
You know,
it was
8 ounces. But
it was
like...
It was 1,000 an ounce. Now it's $6,000 in the
crazy,
hole.
Crazily kicking in a fucking somebody's house. And you know it's in there. And they just got it. The guy who turned you on just told you he just saw the rock. And you go there late at night, you kick the fucking door down, they got a dog. Oh, Jesus.
The pit bulls. It was the pit bulls back.
No, I was way before the pit bulls.
It was before the pit bulls.
Yeah. Last time I got attacked was a German Shepherd, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I got scarred in my face from a German Shepherd.
Oh, my God. Your heart just beats. And
that's tricky in the movie when he's saying, your fucking key, your adrenaline rush is crazy. He's saying, when I sent him in the house for the money.
During that part of the doc, you were smiling, just like your face was like lit up, like you were a kid in a candy store, just thinking about when you it was like when you were talking about reaching up in the ceiling and tearing down the money. It's just like even right now, like it's just like
you can't deny the feeling when you come across money that is free. You know, like I mean, you make it 30-35 grand a year, and you know you just find half your fucking pay, half your salary in like one scoop. You know. You can't, you know what I'm talking about, right? That's like one shot, boom, 15, 20, 30, 40, 80, 70 grand, you know, in one shot.
What's your first thought when you see like a, I can't even, I've never seen more than like $1,000 maybe on the table. I can't imagine seeing stacks and rolled up and.
Your first thought is who's with me? Because if they're not with me, they're against me. And how do I get what I can out of here? I mean, of course, I never thought like that when I was a kid, rookie cop. I was trying to do the right thing. So let's be clear here. However, when I realized that, you know, when the sergeant said to me, if I don't see you take something, do what you got to do. I went, thank you, God. And it was like the light went on. It's over. Every time someone got murdered, I raced to the scene. Because what do people get murdered for in the hood? Dope, money, maybe pussy, but that's, you know.
You know, one of the realest lines in that whole movie is the line that Chickie says, fuck Beverly Hills. You know, the most money in the hood is in the ghetto, which is, and listen, there's cash, there's fucking cash.
It was
cash.
Like an ATM machine.
And you have to catch it before it leaves.
That's right.
That's what you're doing.
That's where the money's transpiring.
That's what you're doing. Listen, when I was a fucking kid, my family had a bodega on 118th Street, like on 5th, by the fucking...
that was Harlem.
By the fucking Marquetta, yeah. And the train.
Spanish Harlem.
My mom was right there when I was a kid, and I saw it. And I saw how, in the daytime, Pete would go to that bodega, and once, and there'd be some guy downstairs and another guy. That guy was holding. Yeah. That guy was packing.
Right.
The money, at every hour on the hour... Guy would come down from the third floor, take the money upstairs, or get counted. They weren't selling drugs. They're just doing numbers.
Just doing numbers.
But in the 70s, think of how many times you go into a liquor store and there's people waiting online for fucking bingo tickets.
Right.
That's what, there was no bingo tickets right. In the 70s. No, right. These places were taking numbers.
Right. Well, what about, and I don't know if your mom did this or not, but what Diaz had at the bodegas where you could just knock on the door, which is crazy to me because how do you know, you were talking earlier, if you trust people, it just sounded, the way he described it in the documentary made it seem like you could just walk in and knock and then anyone could buy anything.
No, that's not true. You can't just walk into a bodega and buy a fucking kilo. They got to know you. You got to be cleared. Especially a gringo. A white guy's not going to walk into a bodega in East New York and get a kilo. They might get a gun in their fucking head, but they're not getting a kilo.
Right, because I think it was...
You got to be cleared, man.
When he was describing, and he was like, you just walk in, you knock, and they...
Yeah, you do, because you're his client. He had 450 clients.
Fuck. At 20 years old, making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Roland drew 100 million. You know, he probably cleared about a million a month, whatever it was. I don't know what his numbers were, but they were... You know, he was clear. He's paying me 10 grand a week. He didn't feel it. Well, 8 grand. But actually, Baron was getting two off the top. I didn't know about. Cocksucker.
Sure, why not?
And then I gave him a grand for doing his job.
Fuck yeah. No, that's it, man. He got your little finder's fee, Baron. But
he got his gig out of it, and I would give him something off the our pot, you know, because I like to take care of people. I keep everybody happy.
That's a crazy situation with Baron.
Adam, if I had known Adam was bringing a million a week in, I would have fucking tripled my fucking salary. And it might have worked at the end.
Let me tell you something. In Miami, the same stuff was going on.
Oh, yeah.
But once a month, these guys would hit Diaz just to keep him in line.
Right.
Just to let him know. We're going to get him next month. Don't worry about that. Pay us again.
Wait, you're saying the cops would...
Those river cops, look them up.
I was with them.
Look those fucking savages up.
I was with them.
The Miami River cops?
Yeah. Look them up. Same thing. Cubans who got hired with delinquents.
Roman Rodriguez was with me in Miami.
Who got hired because There was no background checks under juvies.
Right.
And they got high and they got together. These guys are shooting people and throwing them in the fucking river. Shooting you, taking your drugs, throwing you in the fucking river. Tremendous.
That story's a little overplayed. I just want you
But to let me tell you something. When they were getting out of jail in 1998, these savages were getting out of jail in Coconut Grove. They gave one of them a job as a cook. They fucking got him fired. They put signs up around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
They were pissed at this guy. They were pissed at those cops, though.
They're still doing that to me today, Joey. I can't get a fucking job. Everywhere he goes, if someone calls up and says, Dowd's working here, he's a danger to the fucking community. You know, I don't want my wife working where he's working. It still goes on today. Scumbags. Yeah. Yeah. This only takes one prick. There could be 99,000 good cops. One prick out there that wants to keep the hammer on your neck or the knee against your throat or something. It just happened to me a couple months ago. Yeah. I fucking lost my job. Well, I got called in on my job. They put me on administrative suspension because of this documentary and everything. Because some cop called up and said his wife's in danger. Dowd's working there. Now, there's 100 cops' wives that work there. This one cop is a prick because he probably got his lunch money stolen from him years ago. And no one will tell me who he is. Probably the same scumbag that told my son he couldn't play baseball because his daddy was corrupt when he was 6 years old. Kicked my son off the fucking baseball team.
Now, what job did you have?
I worked in mechanical services in a hospital.
Okay, I see. Yeah. So you can't keep a job. I understand now. Okay.
Yeah.
It's tough out there, Fred. And I don't understand why a police department doesn't hire you. One of these cop departments, I would.
Well,
for intelligence.
I did do some work with the NYPD for a little bit. I did a two-day series for films to help train recruits and staff, you know, superior officers and stuff like that. But just takes one prick, you know, that makes a phone call. Today, the fucking newspaper was at my house talking about these cigars, the 7.5 cigars, saying that Dowd's hooked up with drug dealers and making fucking drug moves again. This is the kind of shit. I mean, the last person that you should be looking for making drug moves is Michael Dowd right now. It's like putting a fucking bullet on, you know, a bullseye on my back or something like that. But anyway. This is what you deal with when you fall down in life. There's scumbags out there that don't want to give you listen, this is America. It's a land of second chances, right? I don't have a fucking felony today.
What happened with you, Joey, when you were trying to get a job after getting out?
You know, you got a little feedback. Yeah, there was a machine gun involved. There was a kidnapping, you know. That always raises eyebrows and flags.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can understand it.
And then I got into comedy.
Thank God.
And I would put it out there before anything was said.
Right.
But there was, you know, I got a job with Fisher Honda. They came back and said, we got a background check. I got a background check done at National Rent-A-Car. The owner came back. He goes, what are you going to do? I said, what are you going to do? I'm here 20 hours a week for $9 an hour.
Yeah.
I've been here 3 months. You just got the report back. What do you want to do?
What are you, am I good?
Well, my insurance. What do you want to do?
Your insurance.
Yeah. You're right. The partner told him. Let him stay. Yeah. He's been great. 90 days. He's a comic. He's here on time. He stays overtime if we need him. It's a hard call, especially now because everything's corporate.
I feel
very bad for the... I'm not going to lie to you. This is the first time I'll be empathetic on that subject.
Right.
Because it's corporate now.
Right.
Everything is on one fucking tick.
Right.
Everything is on one screen. They pay a service, security service, thousands a month to be connected to a police department, NCIC.
Right, right.
And within 24 hours, you get your report on this person.
Yeah.
And you make your decision from there.
Yeah. The problem is, what do we do? You tell a guy, you know, you were a criminal once, now you got to continue to be a fucking criminal? Or you know, well, you did, you know, maybe you're not even a criminal, Joe. Maybe you just did something, you know, you committed some crime. You know, people live the life of crime, and there's people that commit criminal act. There's two different type people out there. And what happens is they end up spending their life chasing, you know, chasing some kind of peace and job and employment. I mean, it's think about the regular black kid coming out of the fucking joint. His family's not there for him to support him. Thank God I had a family that was there to support me and help me through this. And still today, thankfully, they are. But if you didn't, you know, I'd be out there slinging fucking bricks like a bricklayer. Just to because who else is going to hire me? Just really, it's fucking horrible.
I don't think they hire felons at McDonald's, do they?
I can check, but they probably don't. I can see
where. Let me tell you something. I get out of jail. I get a job at McDonald's. How long does it last before I stab a motherfucker? You know what I'm saying? You eat one of those fish fillets, you start stabbing motherfuckers.
Probably would.
And again, there's two views to this. There's the one American view that'll say, well, fuck you. You shouldn't have got a fucking felony.
Right.
Which is the back of my mind always, just to kick myself in the ass.
Right.
And then you have the other view that says, you know, now it's time to tighten your pants.
I'm going to give you an example. I get arrested. Okay, you got to listen to the story. It's going to be a couple minutes, so hang in there. I get arrested. I'm out on bail. I'm looking for a job because my whole world's falling down. I go and I apply for a job, listen to this, as a limousine driver. I walk in, as the line's 50 deep because the economy's hurting. It's 50 deep. I'm like 49. Behind me is another 50. I get inside, an hour and a half online. I interview with the guy in a room like this. He says to me, "You're Michael Dowd?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, he picks the newspaper up. He goes, "Is this you?" I go, "Yeah." I get up to turn around and walk away like I'm not going to get a fucking job. He goes, "You're hired." He says, "Have you ever driven a limousine before?" I said, "At the Whitestone Pound." I moved him around a few times. He goes, "Don't worry, we'll teach you." He goes, "I'm an ex-cop. I'm retired from the job." He says, "I'm going to take care of you." He says, "You need a job more than anybody right now." Okay? Now, that's the fucking mentality you're supposed to run into. What happens? The bitch fucking comes to me and says to me, "Mikey, what are you doing for work?" "Kenny." I said, "Well, Kenny, I got a decent job with limo." Where? Driving a limo. Where? I said, what do you care about where the fuck I'm driving? I'm trying to hide from him. Well, why? Because I know something's not right. When he asked that, "Where you driving?" I says, "I'm driving a limousine." He says, "Where?" I said, "I don't know. It was in the fucking newspaper. I found the ad. I called it up." 2 days later, I buy the fucking $300 suit. My last 300 loose dollars, because they got everything jammed up on me. The feds got everything. The states got everything. They took my fucking change jar. They got everything. I call the office up. I go, "So when do I, what time is my ride tomorrow?" Like a Friday. And they go, "Oh, we got some bad news for you." I said, "What's the bad news?" "I just put $300, my last $300 on a suit." Whack, fucking dead suit, whatever you call, you know, from driving dead people or whatever, limousine fucking suit. And the guy goes, "Listen, I can't tell you this, but I'm going to tell you anyway." He said, "The cops came here and told me not to fucking hire you. And that if they did hire me, that they would put the pressure on his business. Open his books up." And this guy, he's like, "Mike, I can't go through this bullshit. This is half cash business." He says, "I'll fucking go to jail myself for hiring you." He says, "I'm sorry. I can't, but I can't hire you."
Will you shut that up, please?
Just fucking.
For the love of Christ. Now they want to fucking torment your life. You're in a good story.
Yeah. So I end up with no fucking job. So that's when they come in with this whole other bullshit that they end up rope-a-doping me in the movie. I don't want to give the ending up, but that's why that happened.
Well, like, what is your answer when someone says, "Why should we hire you?" Because you can see where it just fell in. It can seem someone scary, you might not want to work with.
Right, scary, whatever. The reason they should hire somebody is look at him as a human being first. Secondly, say, this guy is an adult male, not a 21-year-old kid out partying all week long. He needs a fucking job. He just came out of the joint. Let me be the good soul to give the guy an opportunity, because he needs a job. He's got a probation officer that's going to be here 3-4 times a week checking on him. I don't know. Maybe that don't make sense.
Lee, you're an editor.
Right.
You go in there 9 o'clock at night, you're there 6 in the morning. There's two other guys there with you. You just got heard that they're hiring an extra editor at night. This guy just came out of jail for doing 12 fucking years. Can you please shut that
off? I'm doing.
12 fucking years for being a corrupt cop in New York. Are you petrified, Lisa? In your world, you came from a different place, a different world.
But I don't think they tell you what.
Are you giving the guy a second chance? How does a guy like you feel?
But I think for ex-cop, I don't think I'd be as scared, unless it was like an ex-cop who killed people, maybe.
And I think that's how I would think people would look at
it. But here's the thing, though, and this is what these companies, even if they're small, don't want to take that chance. So legally, they're just like, no felons, because who's going to make the decision that Mike's cool and a drug dealer's not? So, like, they just don't want to have to make that choice.
even though it's against the law for them to discriminate you and not hire you because of a felony, unless it's specifically related to the job at hand. It's like, say, you robbed a bank, so that you can't be a banker. You stab little kids. You can't be a babysitter, you know?
You raped a chick. You can't work at the Y.
You can't work. Yeah, right. You know, they got to be, you know.
It's a fucking nightmare.
Right, but you can fucking hang a fucking piece of sheetrock or you can turn a wrench in an office building.
So my mom is a lawyer, and I told her that we were having you on, and she said, she thought that you couldn't profit off of a crime. So she
That's
thought,
correct.
Is that the case or?
Okay, so profit. Where am I making any money right now? I'm speaking. You know, I'm earning on what I do, not what I've done, right? So, one. Two, if they make a movie, you know, there isn't, you know, the victims are what? Drug dealers that, you know, got robbed? I don't know. How do you enumerate that, you know? Some guy from East New York gonna get on a fucking phone. Hey, he stole $500,000 from me, or $10,000 from me. I want it back. Who is a victim?
So is that
Joey? Help me out here. Who's the fucking victim?
Jesus Christ! You're out there. You're a cop. You know.
Shake down a local drug dealer on a corner.
Man, it was.
It was the '80s, bro.
It started in the 50s.
I was there doing it in the 80s.
You know,
it's crack. Every kid in the corner had a fucking brick under his arm and a gold chain around his neck.
That fucking picture in the beginning, the kid on the bike with a gun. Fuck. He was a young kid.
Yeah, well, that's usually who got the guns.
In New York City, it was buck wild. New York City was buck wild.
It was exciting, though.
New York City was buck fucking wild.
It was exciting.
Listen, for half the people who listen to the show, these New Yorkers you run into, they're all bullshit artists. I was a very fortunate dog to live, and I've got fucking credentials. You understand me? I was very fortunate to live where I grew up there. Yeah. And where I spent my summers on 148th Street with Juan Guerrero. I mean,
people sleeping on the floor, fucking needles in their arms.
I fucking saw it go
bullets
down.
Flying over, fucking, you're hearing shots all night long.
And you walk out here night, and you hear these guys, night. There's no bagels out here, there's no pizza. And you're like, oh, that guy's a real man. These guys are fucking bums. When I saw you talk, you and Chicky and Walter, that big lurchy motherfucker. Yeah. I'm like, these guys are real old school New Yorkers. When that testimony, they're asking you questions. People don't understand that type of, you know, this is how it's done. I don't give a fuck what you think, you dumb fuck.
Yeah.
You know, you guys don't even talk to your own brothers and sisters. Right. And you're sitting there judging me.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm out here taking bullets and listen. If this guy saw a gun, I see that fucking gun. That's
right.
Just the way it is. What do you want me to fucking tell you?
Yeah, right.
We're out here for our lives for 32.5 a year,
yeah.
Plus overtime.
You're right, Joe.
Now.
Well, you were my fucking courtroom.
I'm in a car one time.
I was in my fucking jury.
I'm in a car one time. You know, when I was fucking five, my mom had a dry cleaner on Grand Concourse up there in Tremont Avenue. And it was well known in the neighborhood that the dry cleaner was the front business, was the watch.
Right.
But all across those buildings on that, the four buildings on that street, they would move every week. Every week they would move. Every 10 days they would move apartments. And those apartments, I told you guys, they had a blackboard and they had a black guy cooking. And they had three guys answering phones with tables. And once a week, a cop would walk up three flights of stairs. He would say hello. They treat him like he was fucking family.
Yeah.
Okay? They'd shake his hand. He'd come in, hug the black guy. A white guy, 1969, yeah. Hugging a black guy.
Yeah, they're all killing each other.
Tasting his fucking pastrami. Because it was well known the guy made the best pastrami and the best spaghetti.
Right.
Like, everybody knew Black Mike, spaghetti, better than the Italians.
Wow.
The Italians came
back. I'm jealous. I'm really fucking
sausage.
I'm upset about that.
Just something spectacular.
I love a good meal.
And then the guy would turn around, and they would hand the guy an envelope. And the guy would shake hands with the guy. In fact, he'd take money from the envelope
and
put a number in. Listen, put 5, 17 and 20 bucks. We win 10, you win 5, you give me back. I mean, And it was well known when he went around, I would see his badge and his gun.
Right.
And it was accepted.
Right.
And the first time, I think the second time or the third time, I questioned it. And they told me how it worked. If somebody at night kicks the fucking window of the dry cleaner, the cops are going to come here first if there's a fire across town. They're going to come here first and sit here and guard the dry. And I accepted that.
Right. It was part of the way it was.
That's just the way it was.
Well, we used to close our bodegas. You know, like, and they weren't even necessarily dealing drugs. I mean, you know, it's, like, we'd have a couple of guys in the neighborhood that were good bodega guys. You know, you can go to get a sandwich without fucking getting poisoned. You can get a six-pack of Budweiser's. You can get free fucking cigarettes, some Big Red for a blowjob, whatever. You know, you got to take care of people. So the guy would close at 11 every night. This one was at fucking 9:30. Whatever time they closed, you showed up and made sure they closed. Give them a high sign, and tomorrow when you showed up in the afternoon, you got your sandwich, you got your 12-pack, the nips, 8-pack of the nips, and a pack of Marlboro. Whether you smoked or not, he put those cigarettes in, didn't matter, and the gum, and see you tomorrow, see you later tonight. What time you work until tonight? You know, if you weren't on a job, you stopped by, you rolled through, you let people see you showing up. Hey, listen, it is what it is. That's, he got special attention just for, you know, for a pack of gum and some cigarettes and a 12-pack or an 8-pack of little nips. Remember the Budweiser's, the little nips? They knock them right down.
Real fucking quick.
Cold
motherfuckers.
It's called Bodega Cold.
In the back.
They used to call me Bodega Mike. I don't know why.
And they smelled like the box.
They were fucking...
I still remember the cardboard.
The smell.
That smell of the cardboard. You have no idea, Lee. When I first started doing coke, I hated fucking beer, okay? Fucking hated it.
Right.
But I needed it to get the cocaine kicking.
Yeah.
And I fucking hated it. But there was one beer can I loved, and it was Coors Nips. There was 6-ounce little Coors. And the cop used to get them by the time... He picked me up. Those Coors Nips were on fire in that police car, Jack. And I started drinking those little Coors Nips. And then he introduced me to the ones you're saying.
The 8-pack, the Bud Nips.
Oh, the Bud Nips. And 6 in a case.
No, 8. It was 8.
It was 8.
8.
8 nips.
Right.
But 6 of those in a case.
Oh, yeah.
Who the fuck you think you're dealing with? Some fucking novice or Lee. In a case of regular beer, there's 4 6-packs.
Right.
In a case of nips, there's six. There's 6.
Okay.
6 8-packs.
So there's a story. Walter and I don't know if it's not in the movie, I don't think. But this Walter and I are sitting there. I take him to Walter's first day with me. He didn't know how to work with me. But he was a kid to me. He was a baby. Monster he is, but he was a baby for me. So I take him to this bodega on New Lot, Riverdale and Hinsdale. It was the fucking worst place in the planet. Riverdale and Hinsdale. Mark my words. Worst place in the planet. I had a connection with the bodega owner there. And he loved me because I just showed up. He was a legit bodega guy. I don't know what else he did, but he wasn't selling cocaine. Okay? But he sold his wares there, whatever it was. I go in and get 4 hamburgers. 4 hamburgers in a bodega. I'm getting 4 hamburgers with cheese, some fries, and an 8-pack of nips. Walter's like, "What?" I said, just, it's going to be okay. Just come. He gets in my car, my private car. We go, we pick up the nips, we get the burgers, we go back to my post. We're on the same foot post. We're sitting there in the car, we see this car over there, unmarked car, and we wave to the fucking douchebag. We don't know who it is. But we figure it's like a rip unit, you know, a floating unit that comes in and out of the borough, whatever. They're looking for some robbery suspect or somebody. We don't know who the fuck they're looking for, but we know it's not us. Uh-huh. So we sit in the car. We start eating our burgers, knocking back the nips, throwing them out the fucking window because it's the ghetto. You just throw shit out the window, right? And turns out to be the guy in the fucking movie, Trimboli. The guy that says the back of the hair stood up when I saw Dowd. He was a perp.
I hated that guy.
Yeah, prick. He's sitting there watching us throw these beer cans out the fucking window. It was him. We said hello to the guy that was following me fucking 4 or 5 years. They're throwing the nips out the window. He goes and picks them up. About a month later, 3 weeks later, we get called in for investigation. They call me first. They're so fucking stupid. They call me first. And they go, were you this? Were you? No. okay, I go back to the precinct, and here comes Walter, who I never seen him since that day. Now I see him the next time, 2 weeks later. I said, Walter, they're going to call you in and ask you if I was drinking. I know they are. They didn't ask me. They wouldn't ask me that question. If they ask you if I was drinking, you say no. The guy's on fucking probation. He's on the job of fucking, like, less than a year. Now he's getting brought to a departmental hearing, be grilled about me because they're trying to fire me. And he goes in there and they say, we don't give a fuck about anything you did. We want to know if Dowd was drinking beer. He says, I got the cans, right? My fucking. He went around and picked up the cans. He tried to get fingerprints off. I don't know if he did or he didn't, but apparently he didn't, because if he did, right, I would have been banged.
That's Joe Tremboli.
Joe Tremboli, the guy in the fucking movie. So we were waving at him. How you doing? We're throwing the beers out the fucking window. We don't know it was him. So Walter fucking held his mud. He's a rookie cop who's going to lose his job any second now. And he didn't turn me in. And as we talk about the little nips. So the bodegas, the hamburgers, the little nips. Yeah, it was a good life, you know. Walter learned to hold his mud really early on, and he ended up holding his mud throughout, you know.
It's crazy, like Tremboli and Troster, I think, was the
DEA. Troster was DEA. Yeah.
Fucking, like, when I think cop, I think, like, you or Chicky, like, just, like, more tough. And these guys are, like, nerds. Like, they're nerds.
Come on.
And they're not, and, like, the other cops who were, like, sitting inside, and that's fine, but it's, they were, I mean, granted, the shit that you did was, a lot of it was terrible.
Yeah,
like,
no,
for a cop to do. But.
Terrible.
Like, they're talking about it. Like, that guy who was, he was so scared when they were chasing him.
Oh, like, Joe Hall?
Yeah.
Joe Hall.
And he was, like, he was terrified being chased with, like, a little gun.
No, they're
and
chasing me.
I was like, that would not have happened.
No, we would have turned around, probably started firing back, whatever. I don't want to disparage Joe Hall. He was a real true fucking hero. But yeah, he has a different approach. He was running the other way. I might have turned around and faked left and went right and fired back at them. I don't know. But I wasn't in that situation, so I can't judge.
It was such a different time. And it was so long ago, but not really. It was so long. Like, when I think about the 90s in New York, it was 20,000 years ago for me. But in reality, it wasn't 20 years ago.
No. I mean, it's a different place today. Brooklyn's a totally different place today. It's almost like fucking Disneyland. You know, when you compare it to how it was back in the 80s. Listen, I could go bed at night. Back in, and I used to do this because I wanted to make sure my business was good. I go to bed every night and I pick every single block. I go from Van Sindren, which was the western end of the precinct, to like City Line, which was the other end of the precinct in Queens. Our precinct went from Van Sindren, which is the railroad tracks, over to Queens. I went to every single block and picked out every spot on that block where the dope spots were. And every single block had one or more. You're talking about 50 blocks, 60 blocks wide, maybe, right? Every block had one, and most blocks had four or five. And my exercise at night was to know each and every spot before I went to bed, so that if I got a call, I would know, that's good. Gotta go. Gotta go here, gotta go there. Maybe I had a business mind, huh? What the fuck was wrong with me?
And a lot of people, even like Lee, doesn't understand this. Okay, Lee, so the 80s hit. And this is from my experience, just to let you guys know, when you talk about bodegas and stuff like that. The 80s hit, and we were copping coke in Jersey. And all of a sudden, I had the school teacher. I swear to God, a high school teacher that we had a conversation one day, and he had some powder, and he sold it to me, or we worked something out. And then about a month later, me and him were having a conversation, and he told me his guy didn't come through. If I knew anybody, and I go, no, and he goes, I got one spot. Take a ride with me. I'm 18 years old.
Right.
Yeah, right. Figure this out. It's May of 82. I was just a lost kid. I had a job. I don't know what I was making a week, but my main money was picking up eight balls, throwing a gram of coke on it. Small time. But it didn't matter. I was 18. I wasn't looking to be fucking Tony Montana. Tony Montana hadn't even come out yet.
It's coming soon, though.
He takes me into the city. We have a great time. He takes me. It's a short hike. We go through the George Washington Bridge over. We hook a fucking right down the expressway there. And then we cut up on 135 or whatever the fuck it was, all the way to 135 in Amsterdam. And again, we park in front of a bodega. You walk out. This is 1982, guys. You walk out on the middle of the block. There was like a house, whatever, a building, but there was a supers, you know, with a super.
Right, down below.
Down below.
Yeah.
But these people on these last three or four or five blocks had dug them out and turned them into barbershops,
where you make keys.
Commercial places. But there was this one place that was a disco. Okay, the word disco.
Right. It wasn't licensed or anything. It was just a disco.
And they sold beer and they sold booze. Yeah.
You could buy anything.
And it was a bar.
You could buy anything.
And in the daytime.
No license, though, by
the way. And in the daytime, they had three chicks at the bar. They had a bartender. They had a couple guys. Nobody was dancing. And you walked into the DJ booth. You walked in. There was two turntables like we have right here. In the middle of a turntable, there was a little itsy-bitsy fucking scale, a little triple beam. And over the fucking door, over the door, when before you closed it, the guy stuck his hand there, and the door ledge dropped. So there was two types of Coke. One for 80, and the other one was for 100. And one was for 250 an 8-ball, and the other one was for 225 an 8-ball. Uh-huh. And he gave you a sample of both, and you did them. And I was, I'm fucking 18 years old. Now I had grown up and I had seen this at my mom's bar, but now I'm in it. I'm in a room with adults. Yeah. I'm living large. And guess what? His name, he never took me over. We left, we went back to Jersey, but the people on the way out said, hey, you know, you're welcome here.
Done.
That's all I needed to fucking hear, Lee.
You got a fucking hard on.
Oh, my God. So I went back to Jersey and said, listen, people.
I'm in.
I found this new place, Colombians. Yeah. They fucking $275 a banger. Yeah. That means I'm getting $25 just for going over. Right. Before I cut it, too. I'm going to bang that motherfucker with aspirin or inositol or bodybuilding powder. I'm not fucking around. This is 1982, Lee. And I'm going down.
Fish scale.
And this started something that just went on. I was over there every day.
Non-stop.
7 days a week. Over there at least once. But I don't know. I knew all of them. Bang, bam, boom. People be dancing. I go over there at 2 in the morning, 1 in the morning. It was fucking hysterical. One day I go over there, cops everywhere. Cops are fucking everywhere.
What do you do?
I didn't do anything. They had shot somebody right there. And there was a dude on the corner that went like this. Go that way.
That's what I meant. Like, what did he do when he saw the cops? Yeah.
Well, he still wanted his shit.
The cops weren't there to bust the coke operation. They were there to pick this fucking moron up. That's it. Once we pick this moron up, we get back to business here.
Business
will be
fine.
Business as usual. The cops were in on this.
This was before crack.
This is way before crack.
This is 3 years before crack.
This is crazy, Lee.
Yeah, this is.
And right, 50 yards away, they'd be selling blow. The body, 18 cops, coroner. Ambulance, CSI.
Cops,
hilarious. That fucking 50 yards away, like nothing happened. I go over there and pick up 3, 4, 8 balls a shot. I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was a fucking kid.
Invincible.
You know. Invincible. I was doing nothing. You know, I thought in my mind I was Joe Montana.
Making sure
I was
making.
But this was the places, Lee. How do you get in there? You just get in there.
Right.
And guess what? From going in there, now that guy told me there's a place.
I got a better spot.
Lower. You don't have to come all the way over here.
Right.
I go, what are you talking about?
And it's less travel and less money.
And he goes, you get your dick sucked.
There you go.
And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, listen, you get off the fucking tunnel, get off the bridge. He goes, I want you to go over, boom, and right there, go on. Go 1 to 81. Before you hit the east side, there's a parking garage. Go in there and tell him you want to go to the 9th fucking floor. And instead of going on the thing, they put you in an elevator, they close, you go to the 9th floor, and they'd be like a disco and shit. Your car would be right there.
It's amazing how the fucking city was.
You'd walk in and shit, pick up whatever you wanted. There'd be black chicks, white chicks, purple carpets. They'd suck your pole. You get back in your car. Back to fucking Jersey.
Thank God I didn't know.
Hilarious.
Can you imagine you and me running together?
Before I left to Colorado like a pussy, on April 25th of 1983... This is where I was going as a young man. Yeah. And it got off after that. That was the beginning.
Yeah.
The place where I used to talk about on 148th Street, where I grew up, that was the hottest weed spot in the city. Hot. They even had a punch card. This is 1980 fucking 2 and 3.
You had a punch card.
They had a punch card. They called it the master mix. You either got the sense, the Buddha tie, or the motherfucking master mix. And once you bought 10 tens, You got a free ten. Are you kidding me?
Did you have a punch card, or how did
they gave you a punch card? And you had a punch card. The dealer knew you,
yeah.
And it was the same thing. The downstairs. You went right to the downstairs, knocked on the gate, and the fucking guy would come out. Let me get the master mix.
Open the box.
Boom. And you were right back on the fucking. You took a cab or whatever the fuck you did back to Jersey. That's how quick it was. Lee, it was amazing. When I went back there, swear to God, guys. 3 years later. I couldn't find marijuana. Marijuana was a ghost.
There was none. Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you, I wouldn't lie to nobody here. I was looking for weed to take back to Colorado. I was about to go back to Colorado. I didn't know nothing about, who dealers. I was going to either Colorado Springs. I didn't know nobody in Colorado Springs. I didn't want to land in Colorado with no weed at all. At least let me have at least 220s to get the party started.
Get you started.
You know what I'm saying? Right. I'll smoke a little bit, take two hits.
Share something, and all of a sudden, I got something.
And all of a sudden, you meet somebody, a neighbor.
You're in the mix then, right.
So I didn't want to go. I went to 148th Street, where for 3 to 4 years prior, I was buying weed twice to three times a week. And the people were like, weed? Shit. That don't even exist here. This is
There's no money in weed back then.
Jack.
They were selling trade bags. There was so much little money. There's no money in weed back then.
What is it about crack that just made everything go crazy?
I never did crack personally, but I can tell you from doing a little toot now and then. It makes you euphoric. It makes you want to fuck even though you can't half the time.
Lee, it was the craziest fucking thing you could see. Right now, for years, I could sit with somebody and go, all right, Joey, I went through your records. You got your first weed license in 2007. Break it down for me. And what I saw then and what I see now is tremendous growth. But it's nothing like the growth I've seen of cocaine. Huh. Everybody went from doing acid for $3 and nickel bags and pills for $6 and Quaaludes for $4 to paying $100 a gram.
Holy shit.
And there was no samples. Right. There was no in between. Right. Chicks got samples because you got them either to suck your dick or buy a bag.
Right.
But guys didn't get samples. No. And crack, it was like the truth. Let's be honest. Black people smoked crack and white people smoked Freebase.
Right.
Which basically,
it made it affordable for people. Powder cocaine was expensive. Crack cocaine was cheap. So now the urban guys, whether they were black, Spanish, or ghetto white, they could afford what the big shots were snorting in fucking Studio 54. Am I wrong? I mean, that's what it was. So now the regular kid in the street that could never afford to get high because it was too much money was now getting high, and it just, and I tell the story, it was like, you watch TV, you watch the fucking guys, they storm chasers. You ever see a storm chaser?
Yeah.
They're in a fucking van and they got the cameras and they're talking on their mics and they're saying, oh my God, there it is, there's a storm. It's like a funnel. Crack was like a fucking funnel. It came in, set down, did a little whirly bird and sucked everybody in with it. It was like a fucking disaster. And you know what? Today, half those people are gone. Like 50% or better are gone. And probably 25% of the police department's gone with them, too.
In my world, it showed up mid-84.
84, 85.
Mid-84. By 85, it had taken a stronghold.
Right.
I was gone. I was somewhere where crack wouldn't hit till 15 years later. And that was in Denver.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to hit Aspen and Snowmass. They were smoking Freebase. Now, in 82, when I graduated high school, whatever happened, that same week, and Timmy listens to this shit, he's going to howl his ass off, we bumped into this dude. We were getting that coke from the city, and we bumped into this dude, Steve Vatalanis, who after everything would always say, tremendous. So he comes to me and my buddies, and he's like, listen, I got this pimp. He wants to buy blow. I hear that you got the best shit. You get it from Harlem. We want that shit. We want the shit that's tremendous. So I fucking whacked this guy 2 times. We take him down to Tunley Avenue, down there to these fucking ratty hotels. And we go in. He's got 2 white chicks who look like they fucking got beat up and stabbed.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's a black dude, and he's got like a bikini on. And we give him the coke, and he fucking does something. He's like, dog, go get this motherfucker. This is the shit that killed Jesus. And this guy starts doing some shit. This is the summer of 82. This is June of 82. He starts doing some shitly, and he starts cooking it. Like, not cooking it. What the fuck did he do? He did something really weird. He shook it up, and then he put it on this thing, and he cooked it with a blowtorch, and then he put it through a sock. Then he took the scrapings off, and he put it on another glass. And he did this, like, 3 times. So it was, and he gave us all a piece. And we smoked it, and this was free base.
Oh, Jesus.
And me and my buddies shot up to this place called East West on 48th Street in Bergenline, around the side there. It's still fucking there. It's a record store head shop. They got, like, all the bootlegs from the Garden and all that type of shit. But at the same time, they sell, like, the double-barrel shotgun. You know how many thousands of dollars I spent on double-barrel shotguns? Double-barrel shotguns had 2 things for your nose. And 1 glass with a scoop with a little fucking thing that held like a fucking 1/4 gram. You put that in the bag and you blew it into both your fucking nose holes. Oh, my God, tremendous. I used to sit on the
and this was with, this is with the coke?
This was with the coke, but you could also buy a freebase kit for $49.99. I invested in one of those
things. Did you? You invested.
After the black dude gave me the fucking taste.
Yeah.
And me and my buddies called the Camel. The same dude that took me into the city to get me the coke from the Colombians that time, and he brought me like 12 grams of blowing bottles, and me and my buddy sat there all night and cooked it up, and that was my adventures of freebasing. I never freebased again. What a waste of fucking time.
We're romanticizing this thing. Like,
where do you find a freebasing kit?
At this place, East West.
They still have them?
They, not now. It's 30 fucking years ago.
Well, they must have been everywhere, right?
I don't know. At the time, this was the new hot trend. This guy named Hollywood Henderson had put a bunch of...
There's a bunch of Hollywood
A bunch of people... Right? For, what's his name? Richard Pryor lit himself on fire.
Right, right.
Freebasing cocaine. Right. This was the new hot fucking thing. So at least I tried it once and I didn't light myself on fire.
Right, right.
And it became... It was too much drama for me. But in the ghetto, it became something different. You could take an ounce of coke, get it for $900... Put fucking turpentine in that motherfucker, paint, Gorilla Glue, and stare that thing around and get it 3 times back.
Right.
And sell those for fucking $10 a piece and make...
Rocks. I thought they were rocks.
Unbelievable.
I thought they were robbing the people when I first found them in the street. I thought, what the fuck are they doing? They're robbing these people. They're putting the, you know, selling, making believe it was cocaine. We didn't know what it was, because we weren't sampling it, for Christ's sakes. And sure enough, it was little rocks, cocaine.
Now, let me ask you a question, because I watched a documentary last week, bits and pieces of it. I watched it today with my wife. You're out there banging it out with these people in the early 90s, mid-90s.
It was mostly middle to late 80s.
Where's the mafia in all of this right now when you guys are doing this?
They're trying to get in. They're trying to get in. But the Colombians ain't letting them in.
Trying to get into the drug trade, or what?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. They actually, some came to me and asked me to see if I can get the 500 kilos. Thank God I didn't. Thank God I didn't. I don't even want to say the guy's name, but he's still alive.
Who's kicking the table? You, Lee?
Me, but I'm up this fucking water. I'm getting nervous.
Don't worry about the water. That was weird. Like, in that whole documentary, I'm sitting, I'm going,
the wise guys didn't control cocaine. Don't ask me why.
They didn't. Well, what were they doing at that time in the streets? Were they weren't doing gambling. They had already started to...
They did a lot of hookers. They did a lot of hookers, and they were doing gambling. They were doing the joker pokers and all that.
Joker pokers were big. That's big. Right.
And then the illegal gambling halls, they controlled all of that too. So, yeah. But, and they were doing a lot of, like, truck heists and stuff, like, you know, 4 million cans of tuna, you know. At 20 cents a can, they just made $500,000. You know, they would do JFK truck heists and stuff. That was their gig back then. And you know, they did a lot of heroin. They were doing the heroin trade from Italy, from Sicily, in wine bottles.
That was a weird time period. And I watched the interviews with you. And the plan was to sit here and watch Half Tonight a little while, just to break it down a little bit and let Lee ask you questions or myself or you, or we just go to fucking chit-chat and we'll give it a shot and just see what you think. You ready?
Yeah, sure.
Now, before we start this, hold on. How long before you got out of jail that this was already in the works?
This wasn't in the works.
At all?
At all.
When you got out of prison?
No, I was done with this life. This life confronted me today.
When did this come back? When did they come to you and say we were...
2012, they came to me and said, listen, are you interested in doing involved with this Mahlon Commission special? We're doing a documentary about them. I said, fuck the Mahlon Commission. I got a story for you. And they came to meet me, and they agreed to do it the way I asked them to. And this is what they got. They got one of the best documentaries in the fucking world.
Let's fucking get it started, bud.
If it please, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, the Commission called Michael Dowd.
Where were you, Lee? Please September of 93.
93?
I'd ask the chairman to please administer the oath.
Mr. Dowd, kindergarten,
tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the course of your testimony during these proceedings. So help you God.
I do.
Thank you, sir. Would you please be seated?
I was fucking shot.
Mayo, you may proceed.
I was in a hole for fucking a year.
Mr. Dowd, I'd like you to please keep your voice up and speak into the microphone so that everyone can hear you. Were you once a police officer of the New York City Police Department?
Yes, I was.
How long were you a police officer?
10 years and 5 months.
Mr. Dowd, during those 10 years as a police officer, did you use your authority to commit crimes and acts of corruption in violation of your sworn duty to uphold the law?
Yes, I did.
While you were in uniform and on duty, did you commit thefts? Well,
why do you think we're here?
Yes.
Why the fuck do you think we're talking?
Why did you agree to this?
Yes.
Did you engage in narcotics trafficking?
Yes.
Did you protect drug operations?
Yes.
Did you engage in personal drug use?
Yes.
Damn it.
How many crimes and acts of corruption do you estimate you committed as a New York City police officer?
Hundreds.
I didn't want to lie. I should have said thousands because it would have been more accurate, but I didn't want my mother to get mad at me.
Lee, you're trying to blow my earlobes out or something?
Is it too loud?
Jesus Christ, you know I'm fucking deaf.
It's a crime wave.
Crack is now sweeping New York.
Justice Department officials now say there is a direct link between crime and cocaine.
Evidence
really?
Of heavy money and heavy violent drug traffic is all around.
It was like the heyday of crack. Every city was having trouble with violence.
Don't move!
New York City at the time was having 3,500 murders a year. And East New York was the worst part of that.
Jesus Christ.
It was a war zone.
There were empty buildings. They were just living in them and running electric from the street pole to the houses. It looked like Beirut.
East New York at the time was very, very poor, so you had all of the socioeconomic contributors to crime, all of that converging, and it was a hotbed for crime in New York City.
East New York, Brooklyn, 7-5 precinct, back in the late 80s, was the deadliest precinct in the country.
There's my boy, Walter.
And what were you making at that time, legit, from the department?
About $28,000.
To get shot at? Once a fucking week.
More than once a week. Runs north to south.
That's a slow week.
Avenue
really? The serious thing. The beginning?
You want?
In the beginning, did you get shot at all?
No, I never did. I was lucky. I learned how to avoid.
No drama. Nobody came at you with a knife. Nobody came at you with a needle.
There was knives.
With AIDS blood.
There was knives. There was AIDS blood. All that shit happened. But, you know, I learned how to not get shot at. I'm not going to say because people get shot at all the time, unbeknownst. But I was just fortunate, maybe. And I learned, like, you didn't have to be a real fucking hero because they die. Heroes die. So I didn't want to die. So I didn't, like, I didn't stop bullets with my, because I had no vest on anyway, so I would have fucking been dead. I never wore a bulletproof vest. I just thought it was like passe. It's like, you're not a man if you need a bulletproof vest. Thank God they got a kid. A kid's life was Walter Yerke's fucking nephew was saved this weekend by a bulletproof vest. Walter's nephew. So thank God he wore it. But anyway, I'm just how well I was. I just didn't. I thought it was like not macho, whatever. It's the way it was back then.
When you were in, you were all in.
It was gone. It was on.
See, and that
it
mentality.
It was fucking on, bro.
When I was in.
Yeah, there was no.
I was only in.
There was no walking backwards. No, it was walking out, walking in the front and out the back, not walking in and backing out. It didn't happen.
I woke up thinking about it. When you're walking around looking for an envelope, you'll find one eventually every fucking day.
There's always something.
You find one. It was fucking crazy, Lee. It was crazy. I'd be walking down the street and this gate would be open.
I'm staying with a couple right now. I don't want to say their name. And they said the 80s were fucking amazing. There was so much money in the street.
No, there was tons of money on the street.
It was
a fucking moron could make a living. When I think about the 80s,
it was
Lee,
incredible.
Fucking idiots were buying boats and getting their dicks sucked in the fucking 80s. There was so much money.
So fucking.
Because a moron could buy 300 lewds a week.
That's right.
For a fucking.
It was
$100 and sell them for four. And make $300 profit three times a week, and that's $900. That's fucking $3,600 a month.
Boom.
Plus, you collect unemployment. Plus, you have some type of job that's you
maybe.
In.
Yeah.
You have no idea
the
how
money
much
was
money there
flush.
Was. Everybody was every. First of all, you got a part time. You got a job. Right. Everybody got a job. That's the right. Hustle was you got a job that you got laid off.
Right. They say you got unemployment.
Because you're 18, 19, 20. So you're seniority. It all goes by seniority.
Right.
So you get in there maybe two, three shifts a week. But those two, three shifts would be for $600.
Right.
So that's your rent and your car payment. Done. You got that covered. Now you got the street to bang out with. You knew this guy who sold toasters. You could buy 300 quaaludes a week. It was the money was amazingly.
It was. I don't know where it was.
And then the place you worked for laid you off. So since you worked 2 days a week and made that money, you got the top niche. So you got $450 a fucking week in those days or something. Are you fucking kidding me, Lee? Here you are getting unemployment, selling quaaludes, a little coke. Are you fucking kidding me?
Going to the fucking discos. It was crazy.
The money was easier. Was there was crazy. No computers. There was no cameras.
Yeah.
People were doing wacky shit. People were chopping up more money. There was a lot more kickbacks. There was always fucking something. I was surviving. I was a fucking kid. I knew nothing about nothing, but I knew how to leave the house with $3
and come back
and come home with 50 and 10 pills or a gram of blow or something. Right. You know what I'm saying?
It's amazing.
So you learn how to have this under the radar type life. Just the credit card guys. Just the people who did under-the-line credit cards. People who lived off credit cards but didn't ring $40. They could go to a Chinese restaurant 7 days a week and get the lunch special. Like doctors, and buy a special for the owner. Give them a special, too. And sign for it and walk out of there. Because they weren't gavones. They knew how to keep it. It was fucking crazy.
Don't be stupid. Don't be a gavone.
I was actually wondering that. Do you think if you had toned it down a little bit in a few areas, you could have still done it for an entire career?
I didn't have to tone it down. That was the fucking problem. I pulled the vet into the lieutenant spot.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I was asking them to lock me up then, and they didn't do it. So that was like, what are you kidding me? I just pulled my brand new Corvette. I left the sticker on the fucking window on purpose. It said 30, I think 6.5 or something like that was the sticker. I was making that year 36. Well, 32. I can't recall exact. Don't hold me to quote you. Fuck you. Anyway, and I put it in the lieutenant spot. And because he tried to bang my girlfriend. He was trying to bang my girlfriend. You know, and I just lost $1,500 lodge at Atlantic City Casino with the whole police union there. Everybody knew I lost $1,500. And then I pulled a brand new vet in the lieutenant spot. And I left two paychecks in the fucking in the box, in the check box, same fucking week. I mean, you can't make this up. $1,500 cash the cop lost. I put the vet with the $36,000 price sticker in the lieutenant's spot, and I had two checks still in the box. That's a month's pay I didn't pick up.
What were you thinking?
I wasn't really thinking. I was just, you know, just living.
Like I said, when you were crazy, you were going deep. There was cops that were probably at the 7-5 that you knew who was taking money. You knew who took money. You knew who didn't take money.
Right.
But you know, guys that kept it low beat, acted like they had the same pair of pants.
Right.
And these motherfuckers had
Those guys were good at it.
Those guys.
I was young. I was 20 something. I was one of the, you know, the bigger your car, the bigger your cock, right?
Fuck. When you're 20 something, you don't give a fuck.
You're impervious. Nothing all can.
I'm gonna fucking get my chair, sit down, and you can suck my dick.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
And you look back and you're like, what the fuck was I thinking? But you, at that time, you're like, it's not. And
you felt like you were God.
In that movie, in the 7-5, you're like, it was my wife's turn. And I'm looking at you, this fucking guy. Why are you saying
you that? How many takes did that take without you laughing the entire way through it?
No takes. I tell stories for what they are. There's no reason for me to make them up. I just tell it the way it is.
And they put up a picture of your wife's car, and you were like, I didn't have a car.
Kenny's like, don't take it down. And I know.
As soon as he said that, I was taking it.
Oh my God, I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
Don't ever tell me not to do something.
Oh my God.
Because it's happening.
I used to go crazy.
If you tell me not to do something, it's happening. I don't know why. It's just my
nature. Even if you know it's the worst thing.
I knew it was bad. I knew it was wrong. I just had to do it.
Oh, I really related to Kenny a little bit during it. Like, I was like, oh my God, like, what are you doing?
Like, yeah, you would have been a great partner of mine, let me tell you.
I wouldn't rant.
No, well, whatever you would have or wouldn't have, you may have. You don't know what you're going to do when you're confronted with that situation, you know? When the guy says, because Kenny was facing more time than me because they had him in the goods. You know, they had him and his wife and, you know, his brother in the fucking Marine Corps was in prison. You don't even know the stories. His brother was in a prison in the Marine Corps. His cousin Danny was in the 7-3 precinct. He got arrested with us. His wife got pinched and he got pinched. Four people, and then he could have lost custody of his kids and his pension. So what do you think? How valuable am I as a friend to him? I mean, I'm the asshole today, not realizing back then what he was faced with, you know? So you'll do anything the government asks you to do then, especially if you got no medal.
The reason why you're sitting across from me is just because, by everybody got this fucking hay fever now.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I believe in a second chance, you know?
Well, that's nice, you know what?
I see you, and I know what you went through, and guess what? I would have done the same thing. I would have parked the fucking tank in the... in the lieutenant spot, if you were telling me not to park.
Don't tell me to do something.
You know,
plus,
don't fucking
tell me.
Plus,
you're trying to bang my girlfriend.
Me.
That pissed me off.
Well, that was interdepartmental shit. You guys over here making...
departmental.
You guys are making...
relationship.
You guys are making 30 G's a month.
A year.
Who gives a fuck?
Your
girlfriend?
On the slide.
Between the cheeseburgers, the envelopes, this, that, the extra fucking 8-ball here, you're clearing 30 G's a month. Right. Eight grand a fucking week times four is 32,000. Right. Plus... God knows what else you were clipping
There was a little more.
So why would you give a fuck? That's when you take the girl.
Well, the homicides paper.
You go to fucking Diaz and you go, Diaz, there's a lieutenant at the police station. He's fucking shaking me down. He says, and you kill him and the fucking broad while they're fucking each other. And you send a statement. And say, I don't know what happened.
A statement. You know what? I needed your guidance.
Please,
back then, Joey.
You were slipping.
I needed your guidance.
But no. You wouldn't even.
You know what? I didn't work with a gangster. I worked with Kenny. Kenny wasn't a gangster.
Who the fuck would have? Nobody could stop you.
Nobody.
And I know this because I've been there.
They tried.
Because it didn't matter.
Many tried.
Yeah.
It's horrific when I think about it.
And you know what's crazy?
Many tried to stop. Do you know that fucking guy in the film tried to stop me? Tromboli? He says to me, he called me in when he's trying to bang me up. He says to me, Dowd, stop it. I know what you're doing. What am I going to say? Yes, sir. Fuck no. He goes, I used to do it myself. This is internal affairs. I went, oh, really? To myself. Oh, really? You'll never catch me, motherfucker. I chased him out of bars in Long Island, everything. Following me around with his trench coat on. It was crazy.
He made it seem when he was talking about it, he's like, there's an art to this. Yeah, he's like, yeah, there's an art to this, guys. Yeah,
there's an art to it. I chase him out of a fucking bar. I chase him out of precincts. Yeah, he's a gangster.
There is an art to what my man Mike Dow was doing.
Oh, no, no, no.
That's an art, Jack.
No, I'm saying Tromboli was making it seem like he was an artist at following somebody. Was.
He followed me to fucking... Did he tell you the story? I got in a car one day in Long Island. He was following me. I didn't know he was following me at the time. I ended up getting a flat in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I pull over to the side. There's a fucking... No kidding. There's a tornado coming in my direction. I'm racing to change the flat of my grandmother's car. I take the statue of Mother Mary out of the trunk because we're bringing all this stuff down to Florida because she's moving. And who's behind me? He's Tromboli. He left the house thinking I was going to make a drug deal in Brooklyn. He ended up following me to North Carolina.
He went all the way to North Carolina?
Yeah. I was on his day off. He followed me to North Carolina.
You believe that shit, though? It's craziness. When they want you, they fucking... Well, he had, you know, he knew something was
endless. No, he wasn't stupid. He was just foolish the way he went about it.
Those kids are coming in. They're saying they're getting shaken down. I remember my stepdad one time got arrested. And he was complaining that, you know, they turned in 12, but he really had 17. You know, you're surprised?
Yeah, right?
You're surprised? That's the shipping.
That's shipping.
That's what happened. He was pissed. Everybody, and at first, you're like, 12? What the fuck? I had 20 in there. Now you fuck yourself more.
You know what'll piss you off? This is what'll piss you off. You're a cop, right? You shake a guy down, right? This happened. I shake these fucking kids down. They got 80 envelopes of fucking marijuana. They got some coke. They got a little bit of heroin. They got a whole laundry bag full of shit, right? And they got a couple of nuts in their fucking pockets. So I go, you know what? I don't give a fuck about this stuff. So I peeled off one of the nuts. I get about $400 or $500. I let the kids go. They're young. They're hustling. I get a fucking call the precinct right away. 10-1. 10-1, forthwith. I didn't like the sound of that. So I go, I'm a block away from the precinct. You want me to 10? No. 10-1, forthwith. Something's wrong. That means he doesn't want me in the precinct. I call up, what's up, Lieutenant? He goes, someone's in the fucking 124 room making a complaint that you fucking took his money. I love this cocksucker. What a good man. I go, he goes, take care of it. We're keeping it at bay for now. I swear to God, what a fucking good guy. So I can't find their car. I'm trying to find their car. I'm searching all over these pricks. They drove the car, hit it 3 blocks from the precinct and walked to the precinct to make this complaint against me. I go find their car. I see the car. I can't get in. It's fucking locked. I go to the precinct. I says to the kid, listen, what's the problem? What are you doing here? He says, you know, officer, I had 800, 900. You know, half of it's missing. I don't know what happened to it. I said, did you check your fucking car, jerk off? You're in here making a complaint? What are you doing? I said, you're going to get me arrested or get me in trouble. I'm sorry, but I can't. My money's missing. It's my mother's rent money in $5 bills. He's got his mother's rent money, and he's got a bag of fucking reefer, coke, and heroin and everything else over here, and he's worried about his mother's fucking $500. He's a guy who should be in prison for fucking 3 years, right? I go to his car. He opens the car. I go, get out of the fucking way. Get the fuck out of the way. He moves over. I go, here, asshole, here's your fucking money. You're fucking making a complaint against the cop who's doing his fucking job. We'll let you go with all that drugs on you. I'm sorry. He said, get out.
You gonna take the drugs? Let's book you for the drugs. He would have given you the rest of his fucking mother's rent money.
Fucking
in fives.
I just wanted this thing to disappear. You know, when the lieutenant pulls you in and says there's a guy threatening to make it, and they all know I'm under investigation for the sisters.
Before any of this went down, were there any warnings, Mike?
Warnings.
That you saw, yes. Little warnings.
Warnings.
That you
the were fucking like, captain called me in and said, the inspector called me in and said, Dad, could you put in a 57, please? Which is a transfer. I said, well, he goes, you guys seem to be burnt out. I said, okay, Captain. Well, Lieutenant Inspector, I'll put one in tonight. That was in fucking 1984 or 5. He said, you guys got to get out of here. You're fucking hot. Well, he didn't say those words, but, you know, that's what he meant. You guys are burnt out. Can you please put in a transfer request? Okay, we get it. Because, you know, word starts getting around. you know, the 7-7 was going down. Now, you know, can you guys please put in a transfer? In other words, I don't want to be around you guys when shit goes down. So we put the transfer request in and no one would take us. You know, they have the option to take you at the other precincts. You know, I made phone calls, called my rabbis. They made phone calls. I couldn't get out of the fucking 7-5. So they shipped me to Coney Island for the summer, which is where my whole career takes another turn, where some cop tries to have me fucking killed. There's a whole fucking story that's not in this stuff. It's amazing, half the stuff that's not in this. I don't want to get into that because we're talking about this, but there's a lot more.
Let me do some shout-outs. We'll get this going here. We got Mike Dowd from the 7-5. Today I Googled you the other day and said that you're the dirtiest cop in New York City history. That is...
That's a badge. Tremendous. That's a fucking tremendous badge of honor. Huh?
I want to give some shout-outs to my main man, Bob Lalingus. Always fucking coming through. I love him and his family. Bobby, Sharon, and Crystal always had a great time with Talking Lair. Crystal Johnson and her husband, Freddie Correa, Tal Yaffe, Pat Shea, Ali Baz, and Dan Rangel. I love you motherfuckers. Thank you for all the birthday wishes. It was tremendous. Lee got thrown out. He's in the fucking South Point band for life.
I can't picture him getting thrown out.
The nicest guy in America gets fucking thrown out.
I can't picture him getting thrown out of
anything. For what? None of your fucking business, don't ask. But just, that's what went down this week. I want to thank everybody who came out to the shows. The shows were packed and they were great. Thank you very much for all the support. I'm not on the road again until 3:11 up in fucking San Jose. And then 3:19 in Bakersfield, motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying?
What are you doing for Patty's Day? Anything?
Nothing. It's a Thursday.
Okay. Oh, it is?
Sure, because I'm doing the 19th.
Okay. It's a Saturday. You got that fucking,
who do you think you're dealing with? Some novice?
I'm checking you.
You know, what the fuck do you do for St. Patty's Day here? Listen, when I was a kid, I'd go into the city. I'd stop at 3 or 4 restaurants. Eat a little bit, you know, get the pastrami.
Yeah, you gotta have
get the fucking shit made with the Hudson River water. That's that fucking Flint water in disguise, the good stuff.
Yeah.
And
what's that girl? Nut with the patch, nothing good come out of Flint.
Yeah, and I'd fucking go back. You know, where do you have that now? So now the celebration is, it is what it is, brother.
Things change. You know, the whole world has changed in the last 20 fucking years. You can't have a cocktail. You get arrested when you drive. It's, you know, the whole world is fucked up today. Think about it.
Yeah.
Back then, everybody could get drunk and have a good party in the street. No one got arrested for it unless they beat people up, you know? Today, it's you can't drink, put the beer away. There's so many fucking laws. I mean, can we get rid of some of them, please?
No. Listen, they don't want people drinking and driving.
Listen, I'm not for it. What I'm saying is, you know, you can have a beer.
No, I get it.
Well, in the movie, they're talking about you and Kenny driving and his wife passing you beers, like not freaking out. Like, I just imagined if I told my girlfriend to pass me a beer while I was driving.
You guys are so young.
What are you talking about?
It was nothing like that. We had a fucking hole in the floor of the patrol car. We put a bag of ice, we opened the bag up, put a hole in the floor. Put a hole in the floor. Back then, the Dodge had the bucket. Like, it was like a bucket. And you put the ice on the floor, and you put the beers in the fucking ice, and you put a cover on top of it, so all the water would just go through the hole. We had, like, a cooler in the fucking car.
Lee, that's called you don't give a fuck. That's very rare.
Give a fuck.
In people. And with me, I really didn't give a fuck, but I was ashamed to show that attitude. And I met a kid named Rank Runny. And in life, he really didn't give a fuck. And I would see what he'd do, and I'd go, you know what? He's really having a good time not giving a fuck. Because if it's in your DNA not to give a fuck, it's just not in your DNA. And once you add alcohol and drugs to that emotion that you don't give a fuck,
you don't give a fuck.
And, you know, listen, man, this... 1,000 stories.
I didn't hurt people. You know, let's be real. You know, I had a lot of fun.
You took that dope.
I had a lot of fucking fun.
You took that dope, which they were going to do anyway. Listen, I've always said one thing, and maybe it justifies the shitty things I did. And I always said that once you cross the line, you're open game.
It's all, yeah.
Okay. Right. Once I found
that's
out
how
those
I
days
thought,
that yeah. you were loan sharking, you were open to me. Right. Once I found that you were a bookie, you were open that's to it. Me. Yeah. Once I found that you were selling coke, you were open game to me.
Right.
That gave me the right, as a thief, to
right.
work you.
Right.
That's it. Hands down.
Done.
And I would work you until I could work you. And if I couldn't work you, then I'd make you my friend.
Right. Work with you.
And then that's it. And well, there's nothing I could do. But the first 6 months, I'm working. I'm working the flip.
Looking for the angle.
I'm looking for a fucking angle here. I'm looking for, you know. I know Lee likes to get his dick sucked. Yeah. We'll have a party with these chubby fucking Russian chicks.
Throw something at him.
Yeah, something. You know, so you get to learn people's weaknesses, and you jump on them, and you can't expose them. You fucking make them a partner, and now you're jumping on the next guy.
That's right.
It's such a...
When you cross that fucking line, baby, it's all good. That's how I used to look
at it. I used to sniff those motherfuckers out. Sniff them out. Once I found out they were selling coke, sniff them out, Lee. And I would sniff around their neighborhood with disguises, and I'd get my friends to go down there with a different car. Go get your dad's car, and let's take a ride. Come on, please, please, please.
Wow, you were really good.
I had my buddy with the Undertaker.
Crafty.
Take a ride crafty. Down there with the Undertaker mobile.
You're a very cerebral fucking criminal. You were very cerebral.
You have to be.
Yeah.
You have to be. Yeah. I liked.
You put a lot of thought, though.
I didn't like the drama.
Yeah.
There's always a way in, and there's always a way out.
Well, you have to keep that. You have to think that.
If you look close enough,
even if
it's right there.
Well, I always thought there was a way out. That's what my problem was.
There's always a way in.
My problem was.
And there's always a way out.
I thought I could get out.
So if I knew Lee had blow in here,
right?
There's a way in, and there's a way out.
Right.
With Lee, it was the fence, getting up here, the door. Does he leave it here at night?
Right.
That's the $25,000 question.
Right.
Can I go around the back so the cameras over here don't see me?
Right.
And climb up the stairs.
You figure it out.
Now, in my day, I come up here at 4 in the morning, kick the door right in.
That don't mean nothing.
And come right in here and take whatever was in here for blow and go right back to the backyard. By the cops, the time the cops got here, I'd be in that car.
You'd be sleeping.
Headed to the 170. Gone.
How is a door not a problem? I have no idea.
Not a problem. I kick that fucking door in.
That's why I tell my old lady, what are you locking the fucking door for? They're coming in. They're coming in. That's not stopping nothing.
My apartment complexes are idiots. The only window in my living room is faced on the common walkway.
Common walkway. Everybody, you're dead.
I've broken into my own house when I left my keys in the house before.
Yeah, you're dead.
Yeah, there's no reason. Why lock anything?
One night you're
just going to break the fucking window.
You could be licking Paula's monkey and somebody will tap you on the shoulder. You know what I'm saying? And go, what happened? You didn't lock the window. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Hello.
You ever think of that? You don't put a stake there or nothing?
A stick. You got to put a stick there. It doesn't slide.
I haven't.
Well, don't tell anybody. Get one tonight then.
Yeah.
I've always thought about my gifts. God gives everybody weird fucking gifts, you know. Patience and he gives people balls. He gives people brains and he breaks it down. If I asked you in the beginning of this podcast,
right.
When I face God, I'm going to say thank you for the one gift that saved my life at that age,
right.
To put me out there at 16. And even before that, I almost got mugged in the Bronx.
Right.
But I read it.
You knew it was coming.
I saw the thing
set up
6 minutes before, right. And I got myself positioned.
Yep.
If I would have committed into that ice cream store, I would have got mugged.
Right.
Because I didn't go in the ice cream store and they turned their back on me, that gave me a 10-second run. When they looked up, I was gone. And I didn't get mugged. And I remembered that. I go, wow, that was weird.
Right.
Maybe it's what I learned from my mom.
Right.
Maybe. And then when my mom died, I really had a
sense.
You have to react. What type of person this is. Something he's doing. You got to judge him by something he's doing.
I'm walking out of a Ranger hockey game one day. Right? I'm a young cop, about 23, 22 years old. And I'm 33rd Street between 6th and 7th. They got two dumpsters, the big construction dumpsters. They're fucking huge. And I see this kid. He sees me. He ducks inside the fucking dumpsters, between the two dumpsters. I got my fucking ankle holster on. Put the ankle holster, put the gun in my fucking pocket, and I'm just walking. Stupid cracker walking down the street at fucking, you know, 11 o'clock at night by himself, you know. Boom. He jumps out of nowhere. Of course, I was waiting for him. He goes, you know what time it is? Why is he asking me what time it is? Because he wants to see me look down at the watch and see if I have a watch on, which doesn't matter because now I'm diverted.
my attention is diverted from him to my fucking watch going like this. So I go, yeah, it's time for you to get the fuck out of here, motherfucker. I put the gun right to his head. Bingo! He takes off like a jackrabbit running. About 30 seconds later, a fucking police car pulls up, lights and sirens. This kid's in the back. He goes, there he is, officer. There he is, psycho. I go, yeah, here I am, officer. And that motherfucker was going to rob me. He gets out of the police car, just takes off running down towards 42nd Street. All right, that's fucking... But that's because you learn to read people way before they don't think you're reading them, but you got to know. Today, I had the same thing happen today over here. I don't know, because it's a little shady area where I was. I passed these guys, and this guy kept riding by on a bike. I said, okay, motherfucker. Every time he rode by, I go like this. If this guy rides by one more fucking time, I'm going to go say something to him to let him know that I know you're riding by. Are you clocking me or what? I wasn't sure, you know, but he did have a bag of groceries. The next time I saw him, he had a bag of groceries, so I was good with that. I figured maybe he did buy something, but he kept driving around me. I was getting a little pissed off. You know, you got to protect yourself, you know?
No, you see something and right away it lifts your fucking head.
Right, because I'm by myself. I'm a strange guy in this neighborhood, you know?
It's, obviously, this is one of the most interesting documentaries I've seen in the last 5 years. I mean, I was a fan of the Miami one, but not really, because I knew the whole story already. Giselle... I had heard things about it. This, I grew up in this, but I heard about this. I lived through this, yeah. You know.
This brings you back.
The story.
Brings it all back.
The story I told on Ari's Storytellers, which I don't know if they're going to keep. He wanted me to tell two stories. Was a story about a Cuban cop who shook my mother down. This guy had long hair, but this guy was just a scumbag, Michael Dowd. And he was a Cuban
guy. Was he worth his weight in gold? Like Diaz said I was?
Well, this guy just wanted money. He knew the banking. He knew that the bank was... We had a guy in our town that had worked with the CIA in the Bay of Pigs. And they double-teamed
Cubans,
him.
Yeah.
So he did what Black Mass did. He went to them and said, I don't give a fuck. His name was Battle. B-A-T-T-L-E. John Battle. And he had a son.
Right.
And he went to the feds and he told them to go fuck themselves, that he was going to bookmake and for what they did to him or whatever. And this guy got away with murder. So the story is, if you go on Wikipedia.
Right.
But I don't even know what the fuck my point is. So this guy went around to all these Cuban people. And I remember my mom going, you know, we pay a couple cops.
Right.
But this guy's just out of control. You know, these guys came in, they had a drink, they talked to your mom, they talked to the people at the bar, my mom slipped them an envelope, they hugged my mom and they left. This is what they did every week. My mom accepted. There was a guy in uniform that came, there was a guy in a suit clothes, that came, and then one day this guy started showing up.
Oh, he wanted his extra Vic. He wanted his own personal.
This guy had long hair and Cuban.
Was he in uniform?
Fuck no. And he had another fucking grease ball with him with a beard. Fuck you, Cuban motherfucker. And he was Cuban. He always talked to my mom in Spanish. I know you people are doing drugs in here. I have surveillance in here at night. And my mom's like, I don't know what you people are talking about. He goes, you guys are okay doing your fucking numbers, but you guys kicked it up a notch. This is 73, 74. This guy kept coming in. And one day I was in the back and I heard the rumble. This is 6 months later and they're still going at it.
Huh.
And he's saying, the next time I fucking come in here and I don't have money, we're going to have a fucking problem and arrest everybody. But she was paying somebody big.
Right, right.
So he couldn't really cut in.
Yeah, he wanted his own little gig there.
So one day I get home from school and they're fucking, there's 8 Cubans at my bar. And they're fucking chit-chatting. They're chit-chatting and they're chit-chatting. And I understand the fucking words. I know what they're talking about.
Right.
And I fucking leave. I'm not thinking about it. Maybe 2 nights later, me and my mom go to these people's houses and they're having one of those fucking Santeria parties
right.
and
burning
shit. Burning candles and the whole thing. And the lady takes a dish and does this thing and talks to my mom and goes, something's bothering you. Is it this? And she takes this candle and takes a dish. It looked like the cop with the beard. She took the dish and broke it. She goes, 10 days, 7 days, he's gone. About 4 days later, 5 days later, I don't believe this lady. I'm into Santeria at the time, but that wasn't the Santeria I was raised in over in the city.
Right.
The shit I was raised in was old school Cuban, very loving, no voodoo spells. This was something in Union City, Puerto Rican woman, mm-hmm. not what I had been growing up
different.
In.
It was different stuff.
Right, it was different stuff. And next thing you know, I go to school one day and these teachers are walking back and forth. And they're talking, and I know something's up. It doesn't, again, you know when something's going on.
Yeah, something's up.
And I get out of school, and I ride my bike up to the bar, and sure enough, they're drinking and partying. And they're talking about how the cop got shot the night before at Rapido Taxi,
Christ.
A place that was a taxi place for Cubans. Rapido Taxi, Rapido. That was the name of the fucking...
Hurry up.
And all they did was deliver blow in there. And that's the story, but I remember how the Cubans went after that guy for being like a fucking, because he was an animal. He was right. Going after them heavy.
Right, yeah, you can't do that. You can't be heavy. You got to be, gentleman. You want my money? Be nice to me.
And you're a very lucky guy. You're charismatic. You got balls. Your partner saw that you had balls early on, and that's why they respected you. They knew you had their back.
Right.
When you fucking cornered that guy the first time. It's exactly how I would have done it. Pulled them over, got that license and registration.
Oh, that little kid there. Yeah. Little Boricua kid?
The guy that put the hit on you. The first guy that shorted you.
Oh, yeah.
When you said to him, hey, you're going to put a fucking hit on me? You short me? You're going to kill me? Do it right fucking right, now. Go. I can imagine
let's
the
go.
Look on his face.
Let's go.
He looked at you.
He turned white. He was as white as, he was whiter than his tissue.
He looked like Goldman before fucking OJ killed him in the neck. Before OJ stabbed Mark Goldman, that's what he looked like. He
was like, God, don't pump the dead like that, for God's sake.
No, it's not the dead. I'm just telling the story of the truth.
The look.
When somebody surprises you like that, this guy thought he was getting pulled over, shaken down for 200.
Right. Not even.
When you said to him, listen, let me ask you something. You short me money, now you put a fucking hit on me?
Yeah.
Get out of the fucking car.
Right.
This kid lost every body fluid. And the guy next to him with the piece, he lost every body fluid.
Shit.
Because they don't know what's coming. Yeah. They don't know if there's a helicopter
At that moment, I owned them.
Owned them psychologically, which meant the whole way across the board.
Phone call came in 15 minutes later. Come to the shop.
That was fucking perfect. Perfect.
I knew no other way.
Perfect.
I knew no other way. Because I wasn't going to back up from... I was going to have a fucking shootout. I was going to have a shootout. What was I going to do?
The most classic words of all time are timing. Timing. Timing covers every spectrum of art. It covers every spectrum of criminality. It covers everything.
Timing.
When, how... You know, everything is a split second. Things change in a fucking 2 minutes.
Right. Well, if you make a left instead of a right, the whole world is different.
2 fucking minutes, your life could change. Timing is so fucking unique, you know. And that timing when you took that guy out of the game, that's how you take people out.
You got to go.
They can't even react. They can't. You didn't even give them a chance to react.
You can't.
If you would have sent the hit to him cops,
no
it wouldn't have worked.
No good.
You did it perfect.
No good.
That's a real street guy.
I was lucky. I caught him the first day. I was lucky, but I was there. I was on him.
You thought about it. You were saying I'm very mental. There's a way to get people, and there's a way to get people.
Right. I went right
you
there.
You could hit them in the head with a stick, or you could let them fold for a while, and they fold on their own.
Right.
A lot of people can't walk around knowing that somebody's mad at them.
No.
You follow me?
Well, in prison, the first thing you do is you confront the guy. Because you can't go to sleep at night not knowing if that guy's going to come in and stab you or shoot you, whatever. Beat you with the soap and the sock to death, right?
Look at Lee. You ever get beat with a soap and a sock to death?
No.
Fucking soon, cocksucker. Look at you getting banned from the South Point Casino for dispersing.
Soap and a sock.
Look at you, cocksucker. I'm proud of you, though. You turned pale. For people who know Lee, he turned pale, and you could see the high jump right out of him.
But thank God I got high earlier.
Listen, dog. The high jumped right
out.
Of
boom.
You.
Straight right up.
It fucking straightened you out, and then you went right back to normal to doing what you were doing. It was hysterical. And then they made you take the thing out of your clothes, and then you went out into the parking lot, and there was a truck on fire. So you went out there, and it was like the scene with
where the hell were you guys? There's a truck on fire.
Oh, my God. It was terrible. So
we're at the South Point
I ate everything... Because I
ate the whole load.
How many stars did you eat at that point?
Okay, so earlier in the day,
I gave you two.
Two, so that's 400. And then you gave me two before the show.
So that's four.
And then I had one red one when you gave me one.
And what?
Backstage. You gave me a red one backstage. Red
one. What so kind of red one? 125.
So that's 525 plus, so it's 925.
Did I give you just 125s?
No, you give me twos, and then there was a red one backstage for some reason.
So how many G's?
And then, but then I had.
Don't be bullshitting
then I had
me.
Two of the green ones, so I had like over 1,000 for the day.
And by that point, and then what time did they throw you out? Who?
Like nine.
You actually knew the fucking time?
Well, because I looked. It took me two. I had a.
What'd you do to this guy?
I had a fucked up night getting to the hotel.
What the hell's going on here? We got someone.
That was a good one.
Someone's blowing up the spot.
He's really happy with that one.
That's this fucking shit. Don't worry, you got a candle with this guy.
Both. You guys are fucking having over here. You guys are both having around me. He's in Lululand. You're joining him, for Christ's sake. Are we doing a show here? What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, no, we're just fucking talking
to you. Bullshit.
We're just wrapping up right now. That's it. We're just wrapping up, trying to give us some leverage.
Wrap it up, baby.
We just talked about kidnapping precincts and shooting people.
That what that was? Is that a gunshot that just went off?
No, that was Lee who fought it by mistake. Lee farts from time to time.
It happens.
Dog. That's my dog over there. It's shit. It's
you blame him, huh? Good man.
We'll break the film down tomorrow night. We slipped up on time tonight.
It's all good. It's good to be here.
9 o'clock.
It's really good to be here. You guys are quite the experience. You can talk like a motherfucker. Fucking talk.
You have to.
You are good. You can talk.
This is what you need to do. You got to chit chat. You got to talk to the guests. Yeah. You got to, you know.
Are we still on? I want to shout out to Jeff and Tom, the guys who showed up at the tobacco show to be good to me. And one's a cop and one's a welder. You know, believe it or not, I'm having a problem with some of these cops. But there's a lot of good cops out there that love me, man. I'm telling you straight up, they really fucking support me. You know, they're real people. That's why. They're not just fucking, you know.
Officer, you asked some great questions tonight, and I know that a lot of people lived through that. And I know a lot of people. Today I answered 60-something emails. Yeah. 30 of them were about drugs, or doing time, or whatever. You know, man. Listen, the hardest thing. But there's two types of problems you have. One thing I love about Mike is he doesn't have the felon mentality. Once he got out and he got his shoe shined. That was it. You left it behind you. You paid your debt to society, which is what society asks about you, to give you a second chance. But you still have the people's judgment.
Yeah.
Can't lie to you. Lee, you know me. At first, it was tough. First 2 or 3 years, it was very tough. And people made little jokes, little statements. I took it home, and I can't lie. Then it bothered me. Then I thought about the whole situation. And I thought about what I had done. I justified what I had done in my head. I made my due to society. I took my test.
Right.
I did everything. What do you want from me now? For me to give up on my life?
Yeah, well, that's why I get
bound. Because I gave a mistake.
Then they say I'm not remorseful. Dude, I'm done.
12 years, you're remorseful enough. There's times if I'm watching you that I could think to myself, he's talking like this fucking is no big deal. But I know you paid for your sins. Well, I could see it in your
eyes. You can't share a story without... You can't share a story from the position of remorse. It doesn't work. It's not the story. It's something else.
Well, the remorse is... The remorse I had was the remorse of not saying this story for 15 years of my life.
Hiding.
To being around people and not saying to people what I had done.
Right.
That was the
remorse. Because you're lying now.
That
you're not
it.
Being who
that
you
That was were. The worst part of me all those years, 95, 96. I was living with that.
It hurts.
I was dating somebody. I couldn't tell.
You couldn't
I had
tell
done time.
Yeah.
They would ask me, if comedy fails, why don't you work for the airline?
Yeah, because, really. Get a job. In other words, get a real job. Because no one will fucking hire me.
Yeah, so it was fucking scary. Lee has always asked about that. Lee asked you tonight. And I think that if Lee asked, a lot of people should know. It starts in your mind. If you want to be labeled a felon, and if you tattooed your neck while you were in prison, then you got to accept what, you know, there's still people.
I don't have a fucking mark on me.
There's still people who live in the 50s.
Right.
They're living in the 50s, and they make decisions, those people.
That's right.
And there's people from the 60s and 70s that are in a restaurant, and they can't have a devil getting finger banged on your neck while you're serving shrimp fucking cocktails that are $16 a pop.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just, there's things that limit you, but now you have to think outside the box. So you put a teardrop in your heart and a picture of Hitler on your forehead. So now, what is it that you want to do with your life? Do you want to do telephone sales? Do you want to put a mask on and scare kids part-time? Because that's it.
Yeah,
that's
it. Yeah, good luck.
But at least you're honest with yourself.
Right.
It's the people who say, I'm not getting hired as in an office, and they got the SWAT stick around their neck.
Right, right.
That's the other side of this coin that I can't agree with.
Right.
You made your bed.
Just be real. Just be real. Accept it.
You made your bed. Now you have to fucking live
with it. I'm living with it.
And I live with it every day. And that's one thing. That's why you're sitting here for these reasons. You know, and I'm hypocritical at times. Years ago.
We're all, no one's perfect.
I love animals. When Michael Vick did his thing.
Right.
And then when they said, wait a second, that's another motherfucker. Did his time.
Right.
Paid a fine. They took the dogs. They rehabbed them. I think they gave him a fine to pay for the dogs to rehab. What else do you want from him? I can't sit here and hate because the same reason.
You might not have him babysit your dogs. You're not going to have him babysit your dogs. But that being said, he may be the best babysit right now because he's maybe take care of them because he doesn't want to be accused of dog misbehavior.
I've been thinking a lot about you before you came on the show. And I've been
thinking. You call me every three fucking days.
And I've been thinking about.
And I loved it.
I've been thinking about the correlation in our lives. I did the same fucking shit, just dressed differently. And I got to be honest with you, if you think I'm going to sit here and tell you I didn't like it, I fucking loved it. I loved knowing there was a drug dealer somewhere in Jackson Heights.
Fucking love Jackson Heights.
I loved it. I loved it. I loved all that shit. I'm not going to lie to
nobody. I love Jackson Heights.
And if you want me to lie to you again, I did this shit after I fucking got out of prison for doing that shit. I still did it because I was in a hole.
No one would hire you.
And I knew. No. I was working. I was selling cars.
Okay.
I'm a man of a thousand. Right. I'm a man of
you
a thousand.
You still couldn't make ends meet,
but,
though.
No. What I was doing was I owed an attorney money for a divorce.
All right. So you were paying bills.
I was dug deep. I was there. All of a sudden, you're living your life and you're making money. And one day, you're buried 25 G's and you don't know how to get out of it. So I said, this is the way to get out of it, at least to breeze
hit,
out of
quick
it.
Quick hit. Boom,
and I made a quick hit, and I unburied myself. It was a temporary Band-Aid, but I'll never forget the thrill I got. But then when 2 days later, it wasn't a thrill no more.
You were scared to death to come back to haunt you.
Fucking
this
death.
Motherfucker gets in trouble.
Oh,
now they're going to run my phone.
Oh, my God.
That's why you got to see it.
No. I didn't have a cell phone then. There was nothing I could have done. I didn't touch nobody. I wore gloves. I had a hat. I had a fucking mask. I took the mask. I lit the fucking T-shirt on fire. I threw the
clean
gun
house.
Away and
you
the reaver.
House.
Oh, please.
You cleaned it.
I threw the sneakers away for the carpeting.
Did you change your address? What?
No, I did everything I could.
Everything.
I took the money. I went down to South Jersey for about 5 days and just exercised and did sit-ups. No, off of 17.
You just exercised.
That's it. I walked to the deli.
Why were you scared? Are you worried?
Just thinking about my life, what I had just done. I can't believe I did time. I'm doing
this
shit again.
And now I'm doing something stupid. Right.
And yeah, I got rid of the coke, and I did a little coke, and I got my dick sucked, and it was a good time. But Jesus fucking Christ.
What's wrong with me?
What the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah.
But that, doing that crime, made me become a comedian today. Because that made me stop working in New York. Like I was like, I'm not going over there no more.
Right.
I'm going to bump into those.
Because you're going to get the itch. You're going to get the itch.
That's why I was going to buy coke.
Right.
So I got a new connect in Jersey. I paid the extra $10. I was only going to be in Jersey for another month.
And you were?
And I was gone. And I left that October of 93. And that was the first time I said, now I know what to do if I'm going to become a stand-up comic. This is how I got to perform, and this is how I have to act.
Wow.
I can't do this shit no more. I can't be putting guns to people's heads no more. And that was the end of that. That was the end of that. And, the first couple jobs, people would say to me, you have a felony kidnapping? And I'd say, what's the name under there? And they go, Jose Diaz. I go, listen, you know what Jose Diaz is?
There's a lot of...
That's John Smith.
That's a lot of Diaz.
A lot of Jose Diaz. Yeah. Don't believe that. Do I look like I'm a kidnapper to you? And I do the pose and everything. And nothing. There was a service at the one place got me with the headshot. That was the worst. And the guy goes, come here, is this not you? They had my headshot
from
the
Must have been a good job then.
From the arrest.
It must have been a good job you were going for.
No, yeah. They had that was for a service department.
Okay.
And the guy goes, I really want to hire you, but I got to show you something.
Is this you? No!
And it was crazy because the guy did the paperwork, called me in, and in the process of him calling me in that day at 3:30, he got the paperwork at 6 o'clock that night. When he came in the next morning was when he saw it. And he goes, you don't understand. We made a big mistake. We're really sorry. But you should have told us you had a felony. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know me, dog. I'm Mike Dowd. I'm like, what are you talking about?
It didn't happen.
He's like, it didn't happen. He's like, come here. This is not you. And it was me, like, doing the headshot. Yeah. In Canyon City.
Pretty as you
he
can.
Had me, dog.
You look pretty and everything.
I'm like, God damn it. And that was one time they caught me.
Like, would it have made a difference? Would he have hired you with the felony?
No, it wasn't a place where I wanted to work. I remember leaving there going, you know what? I would do dick here. These people wouldn't have fucking dug me at all.
Right.
These people wouldn't have fucking dug me at all. So tomorrow night, we're going to sit here. We're going to break this film down, the crucial parts of the film. We're going to ask Mike some more questions. I know Lee's got 1,000 questions. I just got him too high tonight. He's sitting there like he's in fucking shock. Right.
We'll get him tomorrow. We got some time.
He's in shock. He's in shock.
He's in
shock. Paperwork.
Oh, okay.
Jesus Christ.
Scaring him.
He's in shock over there. Look at him. He's half a fucking dozen butts and shit.
800 milligrams.
I'm pointing. So what? I ain't aiming on that milligram. You should be eating 800 for breakfast and jogging and shit. You're 27, cocksuck. What do you think you should be doing?
Nothing. I'm just really high. But I have tons of questions for the one we're watching. So should we say, should they get the movie, or are we going to just say we'll just watch
this? Well, half the people that are watching this have watched the movie already. You know, mm-hmm. That's part of the thing we have here. That's why we're all big fans of this story, how we can...
7-5 story. Huh?
So yeah, it's 7-5. It's on Amazon.
Is it on Amazon? I think it's actually on Showtime too, I think, right now. Is it on I think it's on Showtime as well. Because they had it on in the house that I was just at. They're watching
it. They probably have it on Showtime
Demand or something?
Demand.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
It's probably on Showtime On Demand. I've never had... I don't know. And I don't know if I should. I don't know if I... I've never really had a problem with what people do. And especially when it comes to the law system. I get it. That's why I told you to watch that O.J. Simpson. And that,
I watched the first one.
Girlfriend.
Yeah.
Well, there's been two. Tomorrow's number 3 or 4. But it's very interesting what money buys in this country.
Oh, my God.
You know, what money doesn't buy, how a law system
If that were
works.
You or me, we would have been fried.
God,
fried.
How
not even a chance.
Works. The system works in a weird way. And it's amazing how law students, like your girlfriend, fiance, go to school thinking law is one thing. And once they realize what it is, they either like it or they go, this wasn't for me.
Right, right.
I really want to show my girlfriend the movie because there's a line right at the beginning and it just kills me every time because all I can think of is her. It's like, you're not really stemming the flow of crime like you thought you were. And all I can see is her face just... Because all she wants to do is be a prosecutor, and actually, right now, the Orange County Prosecutor's Office is hiring people because the entire prosecutor's office was doing dirty stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe I should have been there as their ethics coach. What do you say to my ethics coaching career?
That line kills me. Oh.
I have been on the other side of the fence, and I've done some weird stuff. And I've been treated weirdly, you know, by cops, but never no violence. It was always in a gentleman's approach. I always understood the position. I had done something bad, and they were getting paid. I always knew all those things, you know. I can't say I hate a cop. I cannot say those words at all. With the felonies and that, I think there's great cops up there. I wouldn't be if it wasn't for a cop.
Absolutely.
I hate the guy...
Like they saved my fucking life, to tell you the truth.
I hate the guy that takes this more serious than what this is.
Right.
There's a lot of cops walking around today that don't have street experience at any level. They grew up in an apartment looking on the fucking computer. And that's why when somebody comes out and just threatens them, they shoot them.
Yeah.
They don't know the mechanics of somebody being drunk or somebody being high or somebody. They never saw that. They were in a sheltered life. This is what I blame for all those shootings. You know, I don't even know my fucking point.
Well, you were talking about it at the beginning of the documentary. You were saying like how you went in and you came out and you were on the street in the worst parts, and how were you at all prepared for it?
Look, we're going to talk a lot more tomorrow, I guess. But the bottom line is this: you go in with one idea and you come out in it with another. You're young, you're scared, you don't want to be there, you want to go back to fucking college, and all of a sudden you realize, you're in the fucking water, dude. You need to swim or sink, one of the two. And if you don't learn how to swim, you start sinking. And, you know, that's it. There's no backing up. I wanted to back up, but I'm not built to back up. I never, you know, my father, God bless, never taught me to back up. It was always go forward, keep going. It'll happen. It'll work. You can do it. So I became the ghetto. It was in every fiber of my fucking being. I love it. I still love it. Listen to Chicky. There's more money in the fucking ghetto than there is in Beverly Hills. It was just exciting. It was exhilarating every day. I hated 3-day swings. Because, like, you know, you do 2 days off 1 week, get 3 days off the next week. 2 days off, 3 days off. The 3-day swing was long for me because I couldn't wait to get back to the fucking action. It was just so much shit going on in the ghetto. People fucking getting shot. I didn't want to see them get shot, don't get me wrong. But I loved the fucking smell of the blood and the gunpowder. And I loved being the guy in charge of the scene. Get an ambulance here. Get a fucking the PDU, the detective squad. Get this, get that. You know, get the helicopters if we needed it. You know, I just loved that fucking excitement of doing that. And then, you know, and standing around like you were God. You were fucking running something. It was just such a good feeling. And in a good cop way, you know, not a fucking bad, I'm looking to rob this guy. Maybe I did rob him too, but who cares? I was still doing the good shit at the same time. You know, I was trying to save his life. You know, I was trying to get an ambulance there to get him to the hospital. I was trying to get, you know, set up a crime scene, look for witnesses. You know, you still do all the crazy shit. Maybe look for a couple grand while you're at it. I was multitasking before multitasking was multitasking.
That's when my mother died the next day at the fucking county morgue. My friend, her friend, the guy that took numbers at the bar, said to me, "Did you find money on her last night?" And I go, "No, why?" He goes, "Because she had $4,500 cash in her fucking bra last night. And where's her diamond earrings?" I go, "I don't know. She don't have her diamond earrings on. Those things were fucking 8 carats. Somebody stole her fucking diamond earrings. Who do you think took that shit?"
I hope it wasn't the police.
Maybe it was the morgue guy.
It was probably the morgue guy. You know, you get shaken down at every fucking opportunity. And even as a kid at that age. Oh, my God. I sat there and was like, you guys aren't. Like, that was the beginning. You know, I tell that story like that, and then Social Security, and then she had an alias. But that's how it started. Like, wait a second. You guys are telling me that in between 35-15, given that terrace, and 22nd in Union City, you guys robbed her for her money, her fucking earrings, her ankle gold diamond bracelet. It was fucking, they cleaned her out. Thousands. A couple relatives said something, but they
we can prove.
What were you going to do? Yeah. I said, it's gone. This is in New York already at a fucking pawn shop. This is gone. Anyway, I'm happy we came on tonight. I'm happy we worked it out this way. We got a little chit-chat tomorrow night. We'll go over the film.
Tomorrow we'll go have some fun with the film.
And we break this down. Let me give some fucking shout-outs here, and we'll move on with our lives. You know, wine is everywhere. You know, it's at 7-Eleven now.
Yeah.
That's it. Hot dogs, pizza, ices, coffee, and fucking wine now. You know, everybody's got wine, and nobody knows what the hell to do or how to do it. I'm not going to lie to you people. In my fucking cocaine days and shit like that, if you asked me what I wanted to drink, it wasn't fucking wine. But if you had it, I'll drink it.
Whatever was there.
You want to drink a wine schwitzer? I'll drink a wine fucking schwitzer with you. Whatever the fuck you got. But it wasn't for me. And we've all been there. You come home after a long, exhausting day at work, and all you want to do is sip a glass of wine and relax. But unless you planned ahead, you probably don't even have a bottle in your house. You already spend enough time wandering around the grocery store don't get lost in the wine now. You know, you end up picking out a bottle based on a label you don't really understand. You get home, you open it, and you realize you don't even like the Chardonnay as much as you thought you did. I don't even know what a Chardonnay is.
It's all a right? white wine.
It's a white wine, and you eat it with chicken, I guess, or whatever. But I'll tell you what, all that has come to an end. Because with Club W, you never have to worry about being wine-free again. Ever. Even if you don't drink wine. It's always good to have a bottle in case your friends come over. You want to have friends. You want to be social. You want people to come over. People say, hey, Chuck has wine. Let's go over there at 2 in the morning. If not, you sit there. What do you got? You got fucking lollipops. You don't need that shit no more. Club W is a revolutionary new wine club that sends you wine directly. Listen to this. To your door. No more in your car. No more bottles banging like some fucking bum from the street. You know, saving all those trips to the grocery store. Not only does Club W send you wine, they send you wine that you'll love drinking. That's the tip. You know why? Because they got a six-question quiz figure out that'll they got a six-question quiz which figures out your palate. So every bottle you receive is perfectly tailored to your taste. Let's say you like it fruity, it's fruity. Let's say you like it more dry, they'll get it to you more dry. Club W is the leading grape-to-glass wine revolution. Do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? They cut out the middleman. They work directly with the vineyards, which saves you Gita's money. Club W even offers a no-risk guarantee you'll love what they send you. So I'm going to do this for you people, all right? Right now, for the listeners, for the real church motherfuckers, I'm going to give you 50% off your first order when you go to Club W. .com/Joey, J-O-E-Y. Don't ever come home wine-free again. Mama wants a stabbing, and you want to show up with fucking organic water or almond milk. Fuck you. Go to clubw.com/Joey and get 50% off your first order. That's clubw.com/Joey. Trust me what I'm telling you. Club W will rock your world. They send it right to your house, and it's a simple test you take. They even tell you what to eat with the food, with the nachos. They even give you a recipe for the fucking nachos or whatever you're going to cook to enjoy with the wine. Again, Club W, 50% off your first order. That's clubw.com/Joey, all right? Now, another thing I got to talk to you people. I'll tell you what's very important in your lives. Security. Let's say fucking Mike Dow comes over. You don't want to answer the fucking door.
Right. Unless you, if you're not, if you're playing right, you're good. That's if you're right. Fucking around, you better call this guy.
This is the sound of a package being delivered, of friends coming over for dinner, but it's also the sound of someone planning to rob you blind. Over 95% of home break-ins happen during the day, okay?
That's right.
And if you work, you're not by the house unless you have a pet chihuahua. What the fuck's he going to do?
Right.
So burglars always almost start by ringing your doorbell to see if someone's home before they pillage through your fucking possessions, okay? Listen to what I'm telling you. They pillage through your possessions. With the Ring video doorbell, you can see and talk to everyone at your door from anywhere in the world. That means you could be in fucking Shanghai. And somebody rings your doorbell and you're right there. Que pasa, cocksucker.
Wow.
Why are you ringing my doorbell? Ring's advanced motion detection alerts you even if somebody doesn't ring the doorbell. It's like the call ID for your home. With the Ring video doorbell, you can talk to delivery people and keep an eye on your package. If someone tries to mess with it, you get an instant alert and the HD video, the whole thing. The HD video, the whole thing of somebody robbing it. It's like having a neighbor with an eye on your house for 24/7 without the judgment. All right? So listen, what I'm trying to tell you is, Damon, my main man, installed this at his house because my doorbell wire was kaput. When we move, we're going to install the Ring. What Damon said was, it's sensational. So an animal comes in the front yard, the lights turn on, you can plug it to a bunch of other things. Ring is great. So do me a favor. Installing the Ring video doorbell takes minutes, and it works either with your current wiring or your built-in rechargeable battery. Put your mind at ease and protect your home with the Video Doorbell, Time Magazine, and USA Today named one of the top 10 gadgets of the year. My listeners get free, expedited. You ready for that one? Expedited. Wow. FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/church right now. That's ring.com/church right now. With the Ring Video Doorbell, you're always, always home. So do me a favor. Check it out. Go to ring.com/church right now and get free expedited FedEx shipping. What am I talking about? Shipping. And beside that, my number one, I love you guys with all my heart. On it. Solid, like the Rock of Gibraltar. from the Shroom Tech Sport, from the Shroom Tech Immune, to the Hemp Force Protein Chocolate, to the Acai Vanilla. What they're throwing is fucking pure heat. If you want to raise your testosterone, they'll help you there. If you want more fat in your diet, coconut clean fat, they'll help you there. But who the fuck am I to complain? You know what I'm saying? Go to Onnit.com right now and see the great selection of nutrients and supplements they got for you. They got kettlebells and shit, but I can't help you with them. I'm not telling you not to get them. Lee and I both know they're great. But go to Onnit.com right now. What is it, Lee? /church. Boom! CHURCH. And get 10% of your first order delivered right to your motherfucking door, Jack.
Let's boom!
So I want to thank Ring one more time, Club W, and Onnit. I want to thank Mike Dowd one more time for stopping by tonight.
Happy to be here. You guys are some act.
And we'll be here tomorrow night. Same bat time, same bat channel. Trying to listen to a motherfucking party. I love you, cocksuckers. Stay black. Uncle Joey here with his main man, Lee Sayat. Lee, you look petrified. I've never seen you. What's the matter? The cops
are coming against you? He's
not driving, is he? He does everything. Don't worry about like that. This, is he?
Oh, my God. Love you. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, we'll talk tomorrow. you don't feel nothing?
This show is brought to you by Ring. Go to Ring.com and look at their brand new video doorbell that will change your world. And when you go to Ring.com/church, you're going to get free expedited FedEx shipping. You go to Ring.com/church. This show is brought to you by ClubW.com. Never come home to a wine-free house again. Just go to ClubW.com/Joey to get 50% off of your first order. That's right. Right now, Club W is offering our listeners 50% off of your first order when you go to ClubW.com/Joey. And go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off your first order of all the great optimization products like Alpha Brain and New Mood.